From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Songbird digging in. Martini Glass is trying for the huge upset. Songbird is digging down. She's got Martini Glass, it appears. Rick Porter, you can go to the winner's circle. Songbird's going to win the Delaware Handicap.
Lady Eli still in hand. And here she comes. And she has bursted to the lead as they move into the final furlong. Outstanding is chasing her home. It's only Acting Dad and Consumer Credit. But they're all not going to get the undefeated Lady Eli. She crushed them.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Tis Ms. Sue is bidding for the upset. The hometown horse making Royal Delta work every step of the way down the lane. Royal Delta, Mike Smith, Joe Rocco Jr., and Tis Ms. Sue. Royal Delta, Tis Ms. Sue to the line. Royal Delta sticks it out by a head.
Oscar Performance sent down with a 2.5 length lead, called to the bar, and Yoshida trying to chase him home, but Oscar Performance has opened up three. Called to the bar is second, and then comes Yoshida to the outside, and Holmesman down the center of the course, followed by Good Samaritan. Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Well, it's another weekend highlighted by several big stakes, and stakes that, as you just heard, have been captured by some pretty big names. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network. It is the Equine Forum, and it is right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to once again be in the saddle with you for the next 3 hours, right up until 11 a.m. Eastern Time. We are only 118 days, 9 hours, and 48 minutes from the Breeders' Cup World Championships and the return to Del Mar, November 5th and 6th. Of course, you'll hear every Breeders' Cup race exclusively with us here on radio, on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Very proud to say we have been the official partner of the Breeders' Cup on radio since 2007, that deluge at Monmouth Park. And what a ride it's been. And although there may not be any Breeders' Cup Challenge races slated for this weekend, the stakes which are being run will no doubt have a significant impact on several Breeders' Cup divisions. And for all of you golf fans out there, you will appreciate this. There is a Ryder Cup parallel with today's graded stakes on this closing weekend of the meet at Belmont Park, which of course means that racing later this week, this coming week, is going to shift to the Spa, Saratoga, in upstate New York, and that's always welcome news. Although my father would say, the minute Saratoga hits, summer is over. So for all you summer lovers, if you believe in that theory, summer is almost over. And I think the reason is because it goes so quickly. Once Saratoga hits, the action, the excitement, it just goes by so quick. And then you're right into Labor Day, the kids going back to school, football season, and you know what's next, fall and winter. So maybe some truth to that. But you have the Grade 1 Belmont Oaks Invitational for 3-year-old fillies later today. You have the Grade 1 Belmont Derby Invitational for the 3-year-old boys. Each of those attracting some exciting European runners, which is why I say that we have somewhat of a Ryder Cup feel in those races. The competition, the Ryder Cup itself, pits the best golfers from the U.S., against the top golfers from Europe. And we are going to see something similar in those stakes at Belmont today. Not quite to the level of the Breeders' Cup, but still a good test for the 3-year-olds who have shown promise here in the States and those who have come from Europe to kind of test the waters, if you will. We talk about that with the Arlington Million Day, too. That's always been kind of the consensus of Arlington Million Day, where it's a bit of a Ryder Cup. You get some of the Europeans, maybe not the top Europeans, but you get some good ones coming over to kind of see where they stack up against the top Americans and vice versa. And I think it's safe to say that the Euros are holding a pretty strong hand in the Oaks later today. And that's thanks to even money morning line favorite Santa Barbara from the barn of Ireland's super trainer Aidan O'Brien. She's only 1-for-4 lifetime. And if you're thinking even money is a bit low on a filly with only one win, I would have to agree. Now, her three losses did come against Group 1 competition, let's be fair. And that morning line is probably more a reflection of the rest of the competition that she's facing. But I will take a shot against her at even money, because I do believe that there are some horses in there that can give her a run for her money if she's not on her A game. The American's main hope is going to come with number 7, Plum Ali. And the filly that also defeated Plum Ali in her last start, Kon Lima. Both of those appear to be logical choices if you don't like the even money that you're going to get on European Ship or Santa Barbara. In the Belmont Derby, that trophy may very well be heading back to Europe with Aidan O'Brien and jockey Ryan Moore as they team up with 7-5 morning line favorite Bolshoi Ballet. The talented son of Galileo is winless in his two tries with Group 1 competition, but he is more than proven at the mile and a quarter distance, which automatically gives him a huge edge over his American rivals. The race in between the Belmont Oaks and the Belmont Derby is also, for me anyways, extremely intriguing. It's the 6.5 furlong Grade 3 Victory Ride. Now, you don't have any Euros for the Americans to contend with. It's not that type of a race because it's a dirt sprint. But it's a pretty good showdown between the undefeated Louisiana bred sprinter Australasia from the barn of Brad Cox, who is now a perfect 6-for-6, by the way, and going to take on 7 rivals in that one. So that's a really good race, too. So 3 outstanding greatest stakes in succession at Belmont. The biggest day of racing at Delaware Park, is this afternoon, too. That's highlighted by the Grade 2 Delaware Handicap and the Grade 3 Robert Dick Memorial. Brad Cox, as he so often is back in the spotlight in those races at Delaware, too, in the Delaware Handicap, with the 3-2 morning line favorite Bonnie South, who was runner-up in the Ogden Phipps in her most recent start. So good racing there. You also have a couple of really nice stakes north of the border at Woodbine, which will play into the Woodbine Oaks and the Queen's Plate picture later this summer. The Grade 3 Celine Stakes is race number 7 today, and the $125,000 Fury Stakes is race number 9. I am going to spend plenty of time talking about today's racing action with my full slate of special guests this morning. Delaware Racing Secretary Jed Doro will join me at 8:15 Eastern. That's just in a few minutes after our first commercial break. Trainer Jonathan Thomas will be here at 8:35 Eastern to talk about his Belmont Derby contender, Hard Love. At 9 o'clock, I'll welcome NTRA President and CEO Alex Waldrop to discuss the NTRA's contributions to the industry under his 15-year reign as president and CEO. He'll also share his thoughts on the future of racing as he works toward his retirement at the end of this year that was announced about 3.5 weeks ago. 9:20 in this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. And at 10 o'clock, I kick off hour number 3. And I do it with our weekly Road to the Breeders' Cup segment. You're so used to hearing In the Room with Sean Clancy at 10 o'clock Eastern. We're going to move that back a little bit because of my special guest for Road to the Breeders' Cup this morning. I'm going to be joined by trainer Michael McCarthy, fresh off his big win with CeCe in last weekend's Princess Rooney. Again, that's 10 o'clock Eastern, the beginning of hour number 3. And for so many of you who are like myself and are fans and were fans of the legendary broadcaster Harvey Pack, who passed away this week at the age of 94, you will not want to miss my interview with John Preachy coming up at 10:25 Eastern, remembering his longtime friend. Again, that's 10:25. That's the final hour of the program this morning. That should be spectacular. John wrote a beautiful piece on his website, which I'll tell you more about later, but it was really, really well done, and can't wait to visit with John talking about Harvey Pack later today. Poll question. How about this? Sticking with that Ryder Cup theme, if you will, Europeans versus Americans. How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today? How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today. And I'll give you three choices. The Europeans win both, Americans win both, or the Euros and Americans split. We get a push. What do you think? How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today? Let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And if you're not a social media person, that's fine. You can get in touch with the show by emailing me, mike@horseracingradio.net. And let me know your thoughts. Do the Europeans win both? Americans win both? Or do the Euros and Americans get a split in the Belmont Oaks and the Belmont Derby later today on closing weekend at Belmont Park? All right, super busy show ahead. Again, going to cover a lot of ground, talk about a lot of different things. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Stay with me. We begin with Jed Doro talking about the Delaware Handicap and that tremendous card that they have later today. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Grade 3 Saline Stakes on Saturday and the Grade 3 Marine Stakes on Sunday. Both Grade 3s this weekend will feature three-year-old horses pointed towards the Woodbine Oaks and the Queen's Plate. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care Products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Hi, this is Steve Buttleman, the official bugler at Churchill Downs in the Kentucky Derby, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And here comes Blind Luck up on the outside, charging in the second, and the rivalry continues. Habit of Grace and Blind Luck as they head for home. Habit of Grace is all out. Blind Luck is making a patented run, and these two fantastic fillies are going at it once again. Blind Luck on the outside. Habit of Grace is battling gamely on the inside. What a great pair of fillies. Habit of Grace, Blind Luck, right to the wire, just like the Oaks last year. Who's going to get the nod? Oh, maybe Blind Luck did it again. Habit of Grace, what a great pair of fillies and a great race.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by our friends at Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern on this Saturday morning. How about that? 10 years ago, Blind Luck taking the Delaware Handicap in 2011. Boy, was she special for trainer Jerry Hollendorfer. That was under Garrett Gomez in 2011, and a special win there for Blind Luck and the team. Of course, the next year you had Royal Delta, who came back and won it. She did it in 12 and 13. You had the great Songbird in 17, Elate in 18 and 19, Dunbar Road last year. This is a race, the Delaware Handicap, which is steeped in history and has some of the top names in our sport on the filly and mare side that have gone through and found themselves in the winner's circle. And I now have the privilege of welcoming Jed Doro, who is the racing secretary at Delaware Park, to talk about today's Delaware Handicap and that tremendous program they have later this afternoon. Jed, good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, looking forward to this day. This is always one of the great days on the racing calendar, not just at Delaware Park, but certainly nationally. And that Delaware Handicap, I mean, come on. Those names I just rattled through, I could keep going. I could go back in history. There have been some tremendous fillies and mares to win that race.
Absolutely. We've had a very good run of some really nice fillies and mares to come through Delaware for our Delaware Handicap. Very proud of it.
Yeah, it has to be a pretty easy sell for you, huh?
It is, and then it isn't. It just depends. Some years it's easier, some years it's not. It just depends. If there's always a dominant standout filly, it does make it a little more fun to entice others to try take a shot at them. The mile and a quarter seems to be a real interesting distance nowadays for older mares.
It is, and at this time of year, too, you're talking about being here on July 10th. It's not like, you know, these older mares haven't run that distance in the past, most of them, but it's definitely an interesting distance, isn't it?
Yeah. No, and we are very proud of it. Due to the COVID last year, we did shorten it up last year to the mile and an eighth, just because we weren't sure how everybody's year was going, and we figured shortening up hopefully would help entice a few more, which it did. It helped a few others take a shot in there, but the mile and a quarter is the distance Mr. Rickman always wants us to run it at, and that's what we intend to leave it at.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about this year's edition, and then we'll kind of work backwards and talk about some of the other stakes, because you have four stakes races on the program today. The other greatest stakes is the Robert G. Dick Memorial, which will be race number 5. That's a grade 3, and we'll touch on that one too. But you attract a 4-year-old filly by the name of Bonnie South to this year's Delaware Handicap. She is the 3-2 morning line favorite, and on her day, she is as classy as they come.
Yeah, bar none. That was we're actually very excited that she decided to come. We were pulling on Mr. Gutierrez to bring Latruska. Unfortunately, Churchill's races just set up a little better in timing for him, so that's the route he went. And hopefully maybe next year we get her here if she's still participating. But Bonnie South was number 2 on the list of horses we were really going after. I'd actually been talking to Brad beginning in January, really saying I really, really want Bonnie South, and was very excited that Mr. Judmont and everybody decided to bring her. So it was a big score in my heart that she came.
The recruiting process begins, you mentioned talking to Brad in January. The recruiting process begins all the way back then, Jed?
For me, it does, because I want to start at a mile and a quarter. I do want to start kind of at least having the trainers thinking about it as the year progresses, because it's not a distance they all point to. You know, this is really the farthest test most of these mares will go at this year for sure. So it's kind of one that I start poking around as early as I can, just to at least plant the seed as early as possible in their heads as a possibility.
It's really, I mean, outside of Bonnie South, and she's going to face some competition in here. Let's you know, be honest. This is a really well-balanced field. You have horses like Queen Nakia and Dream Marie that are going to attract some wagering too. But when you get a horse like Bonnie South that looks like she could be any kind, and she's proven to be any kind when she's on her A game, does it hurt the field size in some respects, because nobody wants to dip their toe into that water and take a shot?
Sort of. Not. I mean, this year it's a smaller bunch of mares this year, so you don't have as many. Other years, you know, there's like 4 or 5 or 6. This year we're down to, I think you have about 4 standouts, and with the fleur-de-lis at Churchill and everything kind of lining the way it lined up, we were definitely not going to get what went to Churchill. But we were hoping for Bonnie South, and, you know, we were hoping maybe Latruska changed her mind, but she didn't, which good for Mr. Gutierrez. I was happy to see him win. And then there was a couple others that we were kind of pulling on, and they just decided to stay out at other spots or point for other races. It's one of those, I don't know how to explain it. It's just Bonnie Sell definitely helped and didn't help the race is the best way I can put it.
Yeah, you also attract.
It helps the race.
Yeah, it helps the race from a quality perspective, right? Having a horse of that caliber,
absolutely.
But it can affect
absolutely.
It in other ways, too.
Correct.
Yeah. Talking with Jed Doro, the racing secretary at Delaware Park. Again, big day with the Delaware Handicap and four stakes races on that program today. One more note about the Delaware Handicap. You attract a Triple Crown winning trainer in my man Safi Joseph Jr., who won the Triple Crown in Barbados before he came here to the United States, and he sends out a pair of horses in there. You have to be happy about those horses coming, too.
Yeah, and the real fun part is the filly Queen Nakia is actually a part of our program here. It's called the Delaware Certified Program, and she actually runs for an extra 10% of the $400,000 if she does finish in the top, you know, in the money. She actually gets a little extra money because she's a Delaware certified, which is what, you know, we don't have the Kentucky bred program or the Maryland bred program or the Pennsylvania bred. We have a program called the certified program, and it gives Safi Philly a little bit more money if she runs well.
Well, it'd be great to see her run well if she can make some noise in there. That would certainly be welcome news to her connections. And then you have a couple of horses who come out of your local prep race for the Delaware Handicap, the Obeya, which was run back on June 9th. Tell me about them.
We have the winner, Dream Marie, Matt Williams, coming up from Gulfstream. She actually came up here last year, ran a heck of a second in the Delaware Oaks last year. And when he ran second, I remember talking to him in the paddock, actually in the winner's circle after the race. I said, you know, I hope to see you up here next summer for the Delaware Handicap. And knock on wood, it's all gone that way for him. So I was really, really happy for him and his connections. And then we have Mr. Ryerson's filly that won the Black Eyed Susan last fall at Pimlico and won the I think she ran second or third in the Obey. I can't quite remember exactly. But she ran a big race off a layoff. And we're excited to have her back. I think the Black Eyed Susan is having a little rematch here between Bonnie Self and Miss Marissa.
Yeah, Miss Marissa second in that Obeya back on June 9th, and certainly a quality filly in her own right. And looking forward to seeing her strutter stuff and all the fillies and mares later today in that Delaware Handicap,
absolutely.
Which, by the way, is race number 9, 5:15 Eastern is the post. Tell me about the other stakes races that you have on the program today, Jed.
Well, we got it's a little overnight stake called the Battery Park. It looks like we're going to hold, I believe, at least seven of them. We may have Ace Scratch. I haven't heard officially yet if Aaron McClellan is coming or not. The other seven, it's a good little bunch. You got Dale Bennett with that nice old horse, Galerio, nice horse. And Dale Capuano coming up with Dixie Drawl. I think it's going to be a good little race between those two, amongst the others. But I just, Dixie Drawl, from his PPs, he looks like he's on his form. And Galerio ran a nice race at Monmouth's last start. We're excited to have Dale decide to run here. And hopefully Galerio gets the money today because he's a local horse in the barn area supporting the program. We love to see that.
Yeah, you know me. I'm picking.
And let's see. Then,
yeah, with the
Robert
just strictly
Dick.
By names.
Pardon?
Oh, go ahead, Jed. Go ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
No, that's right. And the Robert G. Dick, we will be on the turf. We're listing it as yielding as we speak. It may tighten up a little by then. I'm not sure. But looks like another – that one, I think, is one of the strong races on our undercard today for sure. It's a really bunch of nice fillies. The mare's going to mount 3/8. Looking – I can't separate – I mean – I like four or five of them in there. So I think Mr. Stidham has a legitimate chance. I think Al, Mr. Stahl coming, definitely has a chance. It's a wide-open race, I think. I think this is a really good little rendition of the Robert G. Dick Memorial. And the Dashing Beauty, unfortunately, is going to sound look like it's going to fall apart. We're going to probably hold somewhere in the 3-4 horse field. Chubb Wagon shows up, and everybody decides there's other races to be ran when that happens.
Yeah, yeah, it's just unfortunate. But how about the weather? What are the conditions supposed to be at Delaware Park today?
Well, the sun's shining right now. We had a heck of a little storm come through here yesterday evening. Throughout the evening, we got about almost 2 inches of rain, inch and a half throughout the evening. And took the third race off the turf, and we are staying on the turf. Races 5, 7, and 10. We are listing the turf as yielding as we speak. And I would say the main track should be fast by the first. We should be fast and yielding by the first race.
Jed Doro, the racing secretary at Delaware Park, with me here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Jed, you've been in this position now for about 7 years. You were the assistant racing secretary before that. When you talk to people about racing at Delaware Park, what are some of the key things that you want them to know?
We have probably one of the more horse-friendly barn areas that you could find throughout the Mid-Atlantic, probably next to, I mean, not to toot a horn, but next to Saratoga, we're not too far behind. This barn area is one of the best. We have a lot of grass to graze. We have a training track. We have a turf gallop. I mean, we have a lot of good options just in the barn area. And then the other big positive note is we're centrally located in the Mid-Atlantic, so all the racetracks around here are a decent, you know, not a far ship. We feel our purses are competitive with the surrounding region. So, I mean, we got a lot of positives as well as everybody else. But we're just proud of our barn area. It's a really nice barn area. And we got a nice grove to hang out in the race for the races to watch them.
Yeah. Yeah, just a beautiful place. And Jed Doro and his team have done a tremendous job with this field and with this card again later today. Jed, listen, appreciate the visit, and all the best later today and moving forward, too. Good luck.
Yep, thank you, Mike. Don't forget, we got a carryover from $25,000 for the Pick 5, starts in race 3.
Love it. Good man. Appreciate it, Jed.
All right, man. Thank you, guys.
All right, Jed Doro here on HRRN. And what I was going to say to him when we were kind of stepping on each other a little bit there is when he was talking about the battery pack, I have to go with the one horse in there, right? I just have to. Magic Michael? Yeah. I don't know, just strictly from a name play. I didn't even look at the race, didn't handicap it at all. But I think I'll stick with Magic Michael. Hey, I'm looking at the PPs now. He comes in on a 3-race win streak. How can that be bad? Jamie Ness, the trainer. Frankie Pennington, the jockey. Sounds like a winner to me. Magic Michael in the battery pack. That is not a good name for a horse race. We're going to have to change that one. That is really not a great name for a horse race, but I digress. All right, coming up next, your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by Lexus of Lexington. When I come back, it's time for today's First Bet, brought to you by our friends at First Bet, and then my visit with trainer Jonathan Thomas, looking ahead to today's Belmont Derby Invitational. Busy show, and it continues with your Lexus Legends of the Turf right here on HRN.
It was a hot, sticky day in mid-May at Pimlico. The suburban Baltimore Thoroughbred plant and a huge crowd was on hand to take in the 81st renewal of the run for the Black-Eyed Susans, the Preakness. It was 1957, and then Vice President Richard Milhouse Nixon was but one of the vast throng in attendance. Mrs. Nixon, Pat, was to present the trophy, the Woodlawn Vase, to the winning connections. There was a field of 7 3-year-olds going postward to contest the event, run over a distance of 1 3/16 miles. It figured to be a battle between three main contestants, Iron Liege, who'd won that year's edition of the Derby a couple of weeks earlier in the Spangles of Calumet Farm, Bold Ruler, who'd gone postward in the Derby as the 6-5 favorite but had run poorly, and Federal Hill, a speed horse who figured to do well on Pimlico's fast track with the sharper turns and short run to the wire. Also in the field were Inswept, who had won the Spalding Lowe Jenkins, and the Chesapeake, both at Laurel, Promised Land, who had won the Governor's Gold Cup at Bowie, and run second to Mr. Jibe in the Gotham, but had finished third to both Bull Ruler and Gallant Man in the Wood Memorial at Jamaica. Nah Hiss was also in the field, but appeared overmatched, although he had won 3 straight allowance races. And Inside Track, who had never faced stakes horses and had been claimed for $7,500 and $12,500. One of the critical factors in the race was the post positions, and the race may very well have been won right at the break from the gate, as it turned out. The inside threesome, Inswept, Nahis, and Promised Land were notoriously slow breakers. Iron Liege had the four hole, Bold Ruler was five, Inside tracked at post six, and the pure speed in the race, Federal Hill, on the extreme outside. Bold Ruler was a noted fast breaker, and Federal Hill would have to cross over on the entire field to get to the front, if indeed he could. At post time, Iron Liege was 6-5, Bold Ruler 7-5, Federal Hill 7-1. Eddie Arcaro was aboard Bold Ruler, and when the latch was dropped, he shot Bold Ruler to the front, and as expected, Federal Hill was right there with him. Federal Hill had a half length on Bold Ruler as they went to the clubhouse turn, but Arcaro would not let Federal Hill by to gain a clear lead. That forced Federal Hill to lose precious ground and gave Arcaro and Bold Ruler the fence, so to speak, to save real estate. They ran together on around the turn and onto the backside. Midway down the backstretch, Federal Hill gave up the chase, and it was Iron Liege under Bill Hartack laying third, just off the early fractions, waiting to make one big move. As they went to the far turn, Hartack dropped his mount down a notch and began to move on Iron Liege, but Arcaro would have none of that and cranked Bold Ruler up a notch to continue to hold the length and a hop lead. Iron Liege tried again at the top of the straight, but Bold Ruler turned back that challenge as well. Arcaro went to the whip down Pimlico's short stretch and drove Bold Ruler to the wire, a two-length winner. After the race, Arcaro said he had pretty much given Bold Ruler his head, as opposed to keeping him wrapped up as he had done in the early part of the Derby. Hartack offered no excuses for Iron Liege's effort. Sonny Jim Fitzsimmons, the trainer of Bold Ruler, had used a cunning little trick on Bold Ruler. He had put a piece of string on the bit of Bold Ruler to ease the pressure on his cheek. In actuality, the race had been decided right at the start, for all practical purposes, when Bold Ruler and Federal Hill rocketed from the gate in front of Iron Liege. It all happened on a hot, sticky Saturday afternoon in mid-May at Pimlico, in the 81st Preakness, when Bold Ruler gained sweet revenge for that year's Derby loss.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you. Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserve seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky Bred Maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a two-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
This week's Flair Fact is brought to you by Achieve Equine, maker of Flair Equine Nasal Strips. Horses do not fully sleep standing up. They must lie down to get REM sleep, which is also known as paradoxical sleep. Deprivation of REM sleep from many types of sleep disorders can cause poor performance in equine athletes. For more Flair Facts, visit FlairStrips.com/learn.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Hi, this is Chris McCarron, and you're listening to the best horse racing show on the radio on Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
As the field makes their way to the top of the stretch, Analyze It runs alongside of Catholic Boy. And these two come to the final furlong together. Analyze It on the outside in front. Catholic Boy is second. Hunting Horn trying to come and get them. Analyze It. Catholic Boy battling them again today. Analyze It. Catholic Boy. And then Hunting Horn on the outside. Who's it going to be? It's a photo that's going to be a head bobber. Maybe Catholic Boy. He could have come back. Analyze It was right on the wire with him. Very close in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. That was Larry Colmus with the call of the 2018 Belmont Derby Invitational. Catholic Boy getting the victory that day for trainer Jonathan Thomas. He would go on, of course, to that spectacular win in the Traverse Stakes, the Midsummer Derby at Saratoga later that same year. Jonathan sending out Hard Love in today's Belmont Derby. Don't know if the Travers is in the card for Hard Love, but we'll talk to him about it coming up in just a couple of minutes after today's first bet. I'll lead you to that segment in a minute, but I want to clean up something I said before I went to the commercial break. I was having a little fun talking about race number 6 at Delaware, thinking the battery pack stakes, that it needed to be changed. Well, it doesn't, because being somewhat visually challenged, I put my glasses on and realized it is the Battery Park Stakes. So no need to change that name. It is fine the way it is. Race 6, the Battery Park. I'm still taking Magic Michael in that race, by the way, so keep that in mind. All right, it is time now for today's first bet, brought to you, indeed, by our friends at First Bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race number 12 at Gulfstream Park. It is the Carryback Stakes with a post time of 6:08 Eastern. Number 4, Moonlight Strike, 7-2 on the morning line, has a 30% win projection from First Bet Artificial Intelligence, rates 10 points higher than the next closest rival, ranks first or second in 3 of the 4 most important First Bet factors for this race, and is unbeaten in 2 local starts, including the Roar Stakes. Edgar Zayas and trainer Safi Joseph Jr. are hitting at 31% together since June 18th, according to BetMix, and Moonlight Strike broke his maiden in his only 7-furlong attempt to date. Number 4, Moonlight Strike, in today's 12th race at Gulfstream, is today's first bet. I'm back to visit with trainer Jonathan Thomas in 60 seconds, right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, it might not be the first bet of the day, but you may also want to consider making a little wager on number 6, Hard Love, in today's Belmont Derby Invitational. Hard Love going to the post for trainer Jonathan Thomas, who certainly knows how to win this race. He did it, as you heard just a few moments ago, in 2018 with Catholic Boy. And Jonathan is with me now here on HRRN. Good morning, brother. Happy to talk to you.
Likewise, Mike. How are you doing?
Doing very, very well. Let's start with this. What is the turf condition like at this time? I know you got some rain earlier this week.
We got quite a bit of rain yesterday, and right when we thought it was over, you know, we got quite a bit last night as well. So, you know, it's going to be soft to us, maybe more normal for the Euros, I think, but certainly softer than we would typically run over here.
Yeah, you know, I played the clip of Catholic Boy winning the Belmont Derby Invitational in 2018. And, of course, that was a springboard for even bigger things up the road as he would go on to that magnificent win in the Travers later that summer. Is the Travers Stakes in the card for Hard Love?
Not unless they move it to the turf course. he seems to be a very talented horse, but I can pretty confidently say that he is a turf-only sort.
Yeah, and he has been so, so good. I mean, 3-for-4 lifetime, his only defeat coming in his second career start, and he was second that day, as honest as they come. What is it about this horse, Jonathan, that leads you to believe that he can run a big race and compete in the Belmont Derby?
I mean, you have to go off of his body of work and the fact that, you know, the times we've let him over, he's always been extremely genuine. His preparation's gone well. I mean, obviously, when you get into these kind of races, you're going to learn a lot about your horses. This is by far the deepest field he's faced. Although I think he's really going to enjoy and appreciate the mile and a quarter. You never really know. And then, while we've run on, I'd say, forgiving turf courses, we've never run over a soft turf course. So there's a lot of questions over our heads, but he's always been extremely genuine when we've asked anything of him.
You know, I said earlier as I was opening the show that the favorite in this race, Bolshoi Ballet, who comes in for Aidan O'Brien, he's 0-for-2 in Grade 1, Group 1 races in Europe, but he is proven at that mile and a quarter distance that you just mentioned. He's won twice at that distance so far. How big of an advantage is that to already have proven that you can get the distance as opposed to a horse like Hard Love who is still yet to show that?
I mean, one, I think from a physical conditioning, it's nice to know that, you know, a horse can do that. Also, you know, you can probably employ more aggressive tactics in a race when you know you can get the trip. So it's a help. For us, we're going from a mile and an eighth to a mile and a quarter. So for us, I wouldn't approach this race any differently at all. If anything, I'd be as assertive, if not a little bit more so. But if you're going from a mile to a mile and a quarter, yeah, that's a big jump, and, you never know. But it certainly helps having a race under your belt like that, or two, in his case.
Yeah, you have to feel good about the fact that Hard Love in that last race, the optional claiming allowance win at Belmont on June 5th, that, you know, he was mile and an eighth, but he was still giving his all. I mean, he looked like he could have more in the tank.
I would agree. You know, his strong suit seems to be in his stamina. He doesn't have a wicked turn of foot, so you certainly wouldn't want to be leaving him a whole lot to do. But, in a way, he does remind me of Catholic Boy a little bit in the sense that, you know, if you let him attend the pace or kind of be right off of it, I have confidence that he's got the kind of fortitude and stamina to hang in there. It's just a matter of, you know, if other horses have more late turn of foot.
Yeah, you know, I'm always curious, Jonathan. I know when I talk to jockeys, they talk about going back and watching replays, not only of their horse they're going to be riding, and especially if they don't know the horse, but of the other horses in the race, and they study the competition. Do trainers do the same thing?
We do, absolutely. I mean, I think when you're trying to think about tactics, you definitely evaluate the other horses, and as much as the horses themselves, the post positions will kind of clue you in a little bit as to what people might do or they're forced to do. I think you can overthink things for sure. And I think you got to be careful not to overthink and then put that burden on a rider, you know, so we're certainly not going to do that to Manny. I mean, you know, with a horse like him, breaks well typically and, you know, is a pretty assertive horse. So we're not going to overthink it. We're just going to kind of ride our race and let the horse kind of just do his thing, you know, and hope it's good enough.
Well, we mentioned Bolshoi Ballet, who is the morning line favorite at 7-5 in that Belmont Derby. Todd Pletcher sends out Sainthood, who people became familiar with along the road to the Kentucky Derby and in the Derby. He's making his turf debut. Bill Mott has Du Jour. Size up the competition for me and tell me what the key to victory would be for Hard Love if everything goes well.
Well, one Du Jour, we actually were the underbidder at the sale on that horse. So we liked him enough, you know, to go into the low six figures for him. So he's a horse that not only do I appreciate now, but I liked him enough to try to get him bought. So, you know, he's a really talented horse, and he's got a nice turn of foot. Todd, listen, it's Todd. And, you know, I thought the horse, although he won on the dirt last time, he's a big, scopey, free-moving horse that looks like he should appreciate the dirt, or the turf, rather. So, you know, we respect our competition for sure, but we just hope that we get a really clean trip and, you know, we're just a little bit faster than everybody else.
Talking with trainer Jonathan Thomas here on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Of course, Hard Love, 5-2 on the morning line in today's Belmont Oaks or Belmont Derby Invitational. Jonathan, you know, I know what your vote's going to be in that race. I know you're going to vote for the Americans. But I said that this day, a lot like the Arlington Million and the Breeders' Cup, when you have so many Europeans coming over to tackle and test the waters against some of the top American three-year-old turfers in both of those races, it has a bit of a Ryder Cup type of feel. And the poll question I put out there today was, you know, how would these races play out, the Belmont Oaks and the Belmont Derby? Would the Europeans take both? Would the Americans take both? Or would we see a split? So I know what you're voting for in the Belmont Derby. How about the that poll question? Which way are you going to go?
I mean, look, you have to respect the Euros. They, you know, bring over some very nice horses. You have to respect the races that they're coming out of. You know, not to get too patriotic on you, but I'm always going to root for the Americans. And if it's not us today, hopefully it's another American. I love the, you know, you got to give a lot of credit to Martin Panza and Naira for cultivating this series. It's really taken on a life of its own. We have clients that actually buy yearlings and two-year-olds to compete in these races, so it's nice to see the international flair. But, you know, we're definitely red, white, and blue.
Let's go back to Catholic Boy for a minute. How often will you pull up a video of his win, either in the Belmont Derby or, even better, in the Traverse Stakes?
Never, because it makes me realize how hard it is to get a horse that good. I'm half joking. I mean, you know, what's funny is I don't personally pull them up. You know, I'm sure there'll come a time in my life where I will, you know, but periodically an advertisement will come up for that horse, TVG or what have you, you know, advertising him for a stallion. And I have to admit, aside from winning, you know, some grade ones with him, the proudest thing I've ever done as a trainer is get him into a, you know, the stallion barn, especially at a place like Claiborne. That was a, you know, extremely meaningful thing. So, you know, getting to see the replays of his races there and, you know, the chance for him to pass on some of those genetics, it's kind of like being a proud father.
When you go to a horse sale and, you know, in the future, when we start seeing all the, you know, our Catholic boys out there, are you going to be, you going to be paying attention? I know you have already, but are you going to be paying attention to some of those?
I will definitely, you know, scour the sales to look for, you know, some of the better Catholic boys.
Yeah.
But, you know, we although we have the history with him, it is only fair to your client and the finances that go into it that you look at those horses very objectively, you know, and hope that they're good enough and, you know, good enough that you want to buy them. I'm hearing a lot of good reports from some, you know, some very good horsemen down in Kentucky, you know, kind of raving about his the physicals he's getting on horses. And my guess is he's not going to have a rash of 5 furlong winners next summer. But I think as time goes on, it only stands to reason that, you know, those horses are probably just going to get better and better.
Yeah, it's so exciting. And he was such an exciting racehorse, 7-for-13 lifetime, more than $2.1 million in earnings. And the fact that you mentioned, the fact that it was really important for you to get him to be a stallion. And that's something I've heard trainers talk about on this show and other shows over the years, that, you know, there are certain races that are stallion making races. And that means an awful lot to trainers, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, you know, you have most trainers, and we're also in the same mold where we're very fortunate where we have some people that are backing us financially, you know, and they're paying real money for these horses. And, you know, there's two things here. One, it's nice to recoup or even generate some revenue for a client. In this case, Mr. LaPenta, it was, you know, extremely rewarding being able to do that. And typically, it builds your business. You know, you get a chance to kind of reinvest, and the likelihood of getting some better horses are raised exponentially. And then two, as a horseman, you know, with Catholic Boy, I felt a lot of responsibility to get him to be a grade one winner. I was lucky enough to be around a lot of good horses at Todd's that won grade ones. I felt like he was every bit as good as, you know, quite a few of those horses. And I would have felt very unfulfilled had that horse not gotten kind of the credit he deserved. So, you know, there's, I don't know if pressure is the right word, but I felt a lot of responsibility because he's definitely the best horse I've ever had my hands on.
Do you ever go see him when you stop into Lexington for the sales or for Keeneland?
Pretty much every time. You know, we not only myself, but, you know, friends and family, and then the team we have in the barn, we owe that horse everything. You know, he really took us to the heights of the game and really, you know, gave us the ability to develop and grow. And, you know, so we owe the world to him. So I make sure I go pay my respects whenever I get a shot.
Does he remember you?
I think so. I mean, he definitely tries to take a chunk out of me, and every time I see him, and, you know, he used to do that when he was in the barn. So I think he recognizes me a little bit.
Well, it was quite a ride, and he was quite a horse, and we look forward to seeing his babies out there strut their stuff, too. That will be a lot of fun. And joined by his trainer, Jonathan Thomas, Catholic Boys trainer, and also Hard Love's trainer. Hard Love going in today's Belmont Derby Invitational. If you are just joining us, you didn't hear that. He is 5-2 on the morning line, second choice, and could give Jonathan a second victory in that race. Jonathan, listen, man, I appreciate the visit. You're always very accommodating with your time, and all the best with Hard Love and with all the horses you have in your barn.
Well, much appreciated, and, you know, keep up the good work. You're a credit to the game. We appreciate it.
Yeah, right back at you. Thanks, Jonathan. Appreciate it. Jonathan Thomas here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, Hard Love, I mean, 3-for-4 lifetime. That one loss, a second-place finish in his second career start last November. Why not? He has tactical speed, should be up close in that mile and a quarter event. As you heard Jonathan say, it comes down to, can you finish? Can you finish at a mile and a quarter the way he's been finishing at a mile and an eighth, mile and a 16th? And can you outfinish a horse that's already proven, like Bolshoi Ballet, the favorite, coming in for Europe? He's proven he's 2-for-2, or 2-for-3, I should say, at the mile and a quarter distance. Both of those coming with Group 3 competition. He has to prove, Bolshoi Ballet, that he can win at the upper level. I mentioned he's been beaten twice with Group 1 company in Europe. Can he win in Grade 1 competition here? And I should actually say he is 2-for-2 at the mile and a quarter in Grade 3 company. His only loss at a mile and a quarter coming in the Group 1 St. Cloud. That was back in October last year. So interesting storylines there. We'll see if Hard Love can find a way to get it done for Jonathan Thomas. My thanks to him for being with me. Come back and get you set for the second hour of the program next. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his 5-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning 2-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored 4 Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by 2.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures. Earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at tonysteaksandseafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I want to get back to being in my community group.
I want to continue having a soccer season.
So I can throw parties again. So I can go to her parties.
It'd really be nice to dine in instead of getting delivery for a change.
So I can feel safe and protected for myself and my students.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Joel Rosario, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget that if you're going to be in Central Kentucky, you'll want to visit the new Outdoor Superstores, the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It is just a few miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road. And so many of you who listen to the show every week know that I am passionate about the outdoors. I love to hunt and get outside and spend time in the woods. And the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore has everything you need for hunting, fishing. You need to go check it out when you're in town. It is owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley, and the superstore really has everything you need to hunt deer, turkey, ducks, and so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges. So stop in and see them today. The Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, first third of the program, I should say, the first hour, my interview with Jed Doro from Delaware Park, the racing secretary, talking about their big card later today, or that interview a few moments ago with Jonathan Thomas talking about Hard Love in today's Belmont Derby Invitational. Just go back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net. And Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can tune into us there too. Coming up in the second hour of the program, I'm going to kick it off with Alex Waldrop, the outgoing president and CEO of the NTRA. It was announced about 3.5 weeks ago that Alex would retire at the end of 2021. We'll spend some time looking back on his tenure at the NTRA, and then we'll talk about the future of racing as he sees it, too. That should be an interesting conversation. It's an extended interview coming up in just a few minutes at 9 o'clock Eastern. At 9:30, Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. I'm going to welcome Dean Carpenter and Jill Webb Patterson for that particular segment today. Dean is the chaplain at Keeneland. He has partnered with Jill, or Jill has partnered with them, to provide mental health counseling for so many people on the backside of the racetrack, and it's a fantastic program. You're going to hear about that coming up in Unsung Heroes. And then Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History coming up at 9:45 Eastern Time. I'll take a look at some historical dates in thoroughbred racing. There are several to tell you about. And then we'll go down the road to the Breeders' Cup at 10 o'clock Eastern with Mike McCarthy. Looking forward to that visit. And John Preachy will be with me at 10:25 Eastern Time to remember the late Harvey Pack, who passed away this week. A lot of great things still to come here on the Equine Forum. We're going to kick off hour number two next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, with this week's HRRN Racing Update. The action wraps up down here at beautiful Belmont Park in Elmont, New York this weekend with a pair of Grade 1s, the Grade 1 Belmont Derby Invitational and the Grade 1 Belmont Oaks Invitational. Coolmore and Aiden O'Brien ship over a couple of powerful runners who figure to be close to odds on favorites. Santa Barbara takes on the Phillies in the Oaks, while Bolshoi Ballet looks to dance to another graded stakes win, a Grade 1 this time, in the Derby. The victory rides on that card as well that features a Sunday stakes race, the River Memories, to wrap the action at Belmont before we head north to historic Saratoga. Opening day for the Spa. Full attendance at Saratoga this year is Thursday, July 15th. That's your HRRN Racing Update. Now let's send it back to host Mike Penna for hour two of the Equine Forum.
Welcome back. Very busy show rolls on. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning. We are continuing to edge closer to the Breeders' Cup World Championships in November. Now just 118 days, 8 hours, and 48 minutes away. The Breeders' Cup coming to Del Mar November 5th and 6th. Of course, we'll be there as your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships again here in 2021. Very proud to say we have been the official radio partner of Breeders' Cup since 2007. The only place you'll hear those races on radio is with us here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And although there are no challenge races scheduled for later today, that doesn't mean that there aren't races that will have a direct impact on certain divisions of the Breeders' Cup. And I told you earlier, you had the two big races at Belmont, the Belmont Oaks Invitational, the Belmont Derby Invitational. You have the Delaware Handicap today at Delaware Park. You have a couple of big races north of the border at Woodbine, which will tie into their signature day of racing, the Queen's Plate and the Woodbine Oaks later this season. So a lot of things to look forward to on this Saturday of thoroughbred racing. Poll question today, so many of you taking time to weigh in on our Twitter feed, really do appreciate that. How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today? And we gave you three choices. Europeans win both, Americans win both, or the Europeans and Americans get a split. One wins one, the other one wins the other. So far, that's the popular choice. Barely, though, 37% of you saying that it will be a split, 34% saying the Europeans will win both, and 29% weighing in saying the Americans will take both. I told you, a bit of a Ryder Cup feel with those races later today. Should be a lot of fun to watch. Well, on June 16th, NTRA President and CEO Alex Waldrop announced that he will retire at the end of this year after 15 years at the helm of that organization. And there are certainly plenty of things to discuss in regards to the NTRA's impact on the industry under Alex's watch. And Alex is with me now here on HRRN. Alex, good morning.
Morning, Mike. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Yeah, certainly appreciate the visit. You know, when you were named president and CEO in December of 2006, taking the reins from interim CEO Greg Avioli, you were quoted as saying, the NTRA will succeed in moving the industry forward by concentrating on issues of paramount importance to its members, racing and wagering integrity, advocacy in Washington, and a heightened industry profile. Those were the three things that you had cited that you wanted to focus on and the NTRA would do well. 15 years later, are you finally able to now step back and say, mission accomplished?
I'd like to say yes. None of those things are ever accomplished, I think. Certainly racing and wagering integrity are a constant battle to stay ahead of the challenges we face. I would say that from a racing integrity standpoint, with the passage of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, we've come a long way toward putting together a framework that I think can finally assure the industry of a nationwide, uniform, consistent, significantly enforced integrity program for the industry. What I didn't foresee then, what I didn't mention, and that's interesting that you bring those up because I hadn't thought about that in a long, long time. I didn't mention racing safety because, frankly, it wasn't on my radar at that time. It wasn't on anyone's radar, actually. I think in 2006, we hadn't had the eight bells situation. We had seen Barbro had earlier that year suffered what ended up being a non-recoverable injury in the Preakness. We were just beginning to understand the public's interest and concern about the safety of our horses. And if anything has changed from that day to today, it's my appreciation for how important safety is for the horse industry, for horses and for riders. I think we underplayed it at that point in time. Society has also changed a great deal. I think you're seeing a lot more awareness where horse health, horse welfare, those concerns are extremely important today. They were probably important then, but I wasn't aware of them as much as I should have been, and certainly the organization wasn't doing anything specifically about that. From a wagering integrity standpoint, I enjoyed a recent series of articles by one of the industry groups looking for innovation in racing, talking about the issue of wagering integrity. At that point in time, my charge was to develop something called the Wagering Transmission Protocol, WTP. And for the handful of people who were involved in that, you'll remember it well. And it was, unfortunately, ultimately a failed exercise because we were trying to pull together something called host and control technology, which would have completely revolutionized the way wagering was done. But frankly, it was hard to get tote companies on board. And since then, there have been other wagering integrity issues that are developments that the TRA has really led on that issue, and I'm proud for that. And our NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance does promote wagering integrity. We have a specific set of protocols that are there. Is there more that can be done? I think probably so. And that's one area that where there's room for the next person, I think, to help focus. I think we have elevated the profile of the NTRA, especially through our work in Washington, D.C. The longer I'm there, the more I realize the importance of having a consistent daily presence in Washington, not only for reasons of legislation passage, but also defensively to make sure there's nothing happening there that could ultimately adversely impact the industry, or at least to be prepared and to be on the lookout. I think, for instance, sports betting. We knew that sports betting was a potential change. It wasn't a legislative change, if you recall. It was actually happened through the courts. But we knew that it had great potential for opportunity, but also a real serious challenge for the industry. And we're seeing that play out today. We see one of the things that that happens is we have states now but almost 30 states have some legislation relating to sports betting. So it's exploding across the country. And that's a major potential and actual competitive threat to the horse racing industry. And I'm pleased to say that one of the things that we're still working on, because I'm not retired yet, I'm still working on a daily basis. And I have set as one of my specific goals to have accomplished by the end of this year is to find a way to convince credit card companies, specifically Visa and MasterCard, to allow us to create a common wallet for sports betting and for ADW customers. You hear a lot about that, a lot of criticism about the industry, about the inability for us to get on sports betting platforms because of all the opportunity that's there. Say if we get 1/20th of the play on sports betting, that's a huge increase for horse racing. But the problem is primarily because of credit card companies. They won't allow us to merge these accounts that are funded through different credit card transactions. They have different merchant codes. Sports betting is a 7801 code. The horse racing is 7802. And they mandate that those two accounts be segregated, and they can't be commingled. And that's why you don't see common wallet. It isn't because people are stupid or lazy, which is sometimes the way Racing Twitter likes to portray us. It's because they're legal and credit card obstacles. And I'm trying my best. We are at the NTRA trying our best to find a way to get through to the racing to the credit card companies, to make sure they understand how important it is for both sports betting and horse racing to be on a common platform with a common wallet. We have found sympathetic ears. There are productive meetings that are ongoing. I can't say any more about that at this point in time, except to say that we do have the attention of the credit card companies. They are aware of the problem. They understand the issue. They're still adamant that, for legal reasons, because of the Unlawful Internet Gambling Enforcement Act, packed in 2006 when I first started, we have to commingle those funds. We have to segregate those funds. We can't commingle them right now, but we're hoping for a breakthrough in that front. And that's something I'm really focused on this year, because I think if there's one competitive threat that's out there that needs to be resolved, it's the sports betting challenge. Opportunity, whichever you think it is, and taking that on. So that's an important aspect of what we do in Washington, D.C. It's not a legislative matter, but because we have a presence there, because we have a political action committee, we've contributed more than $5 million to candidates over the last 18 years. We are well known to people in Washington. We have friends there who understand our issues. PACs, they open doors. They don't pass legislation, but they open doors and give you an opportunity to make your case and support candidates who understand and appreciate your industry. And ours is a unique one, and it's hard to find people in Washington, D.C. that care much about pari-mutuel wagering issues. They generally see those as state law issues, and they don't like to take them up at the federal level. But we have lots of good friends up there that we've developed over the years, and I think those friends are there. We have a good, strong team in Washington, D.C. with the Alpine Group, and we now have the Akin Gump is also we've added them to our team of lobbyists on the ground in Washington. They're specific. Akin is specific to the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act implementation. Alpine Group works with us on a variety of matters across the board. So we have a good, strong legislative team in Washington. That's a team that I lead from Lexington, but it's one of the things that one of the skills, if you will, that I brought with me to the NTRA 15 years ago. And the NTRA has been a wonderful opportunity to hone those skills and to put them to good use for the industry. Whoever comes next, whatever the NTRA is in the future, number one on the list has got to be and remain what we do in Washington, D.C. for this industry. There's no major industry in this nation that doesn't have a significant Washington, D.C. presence. Think of all the associations. Whatever work you do, there's an association in Washington that probably represents you. And that's what the NTRA has become, and that's why it needs to stay. There is the American Horse Council. They do wonderful work. I'm a trustee. I love working with the American Horse Council. But we need somebody up there looking focused on wagering matters, on matters specific to thoroughbred racing every day, because we're unique in that respect. We're not like other breeds and disciplines who don't have those specific concerns. Tax law matters. So many tax law issues important to breeders and owners especially. You know, one of the things we need in this industry, we think we have a horse shortage, and we certainly do, but I've always thought that the horse shortage reflected more of an owner shortage than an actual horse shortage. And creating opportunities, making sure that investment in horse racing is advantageous, or at least not disadvantageous from a tax perspective, is another critical element of what we do up there. We've got a great tax team. working with Dean Dorton, Jen Shaw, who's there, who is the quickly becoming the dean of taxation, where horse racing ownership and breeding are concerned. She helps us on a daily basis, and that's a great partnership we've built, and that's got to stay in place, and it will, and I'm confident it will. So
visiting
I'm going to take a
Waldrop.
Breath now and let you ask a question.
Yeah, I see you learned the filibuster side of things really well, Alex.
I want to get my piece in, and then now we can
listen to that. No, I mean, well done stating, you know, walking through all of the different things. So there are so many layers to this, and you know, nobody could argue with the work that the NTRA has done in Washington over the years. It's been critical to the success of the industry and the support of the industry. You know, when the NTRA was formed in 1998, it was supported by membership dues, and there was a common opinion that the industry would finally have that centralized governing body like Major League Baseball, like the NBA and other sports. And you hear people say it all the time. We need a commissioner. The industry needs a governing body. You're in a position to address those comments as well as anyone, Alex. So what does Alex Waldrop, president and CEO of the NTRA, say to those who share those opinions and beliefs?
Wow, I wish I had a dollar for every time I have addressed this question, certainly privately with people. I'd be a rich man, because you're right. There's so many people out there ahead. High expectations for the early NTRA and its potential as a league office in the sense that we see in other sports. And yes, it was dues driven at that point in time, and that dues model fell apart pretty quickly after I arrived. I don't know if that was a coincidence or if that was about to happen, but almost from the day I started, groups like Churchill Downs and the major track supporters in particular were not willing to continue to pay what was at that point in time more than $1 million a year per member. Horsemen were paying actually more than tracks. And it didn't achieve the result before I got there. And that's one of my first jobs, was to find a sustainable model. Okay, what will work? Can we form a league, and can we fund it? Where is the money going to come from? And just understand that most sports leagues are built around commercial cooperation. In fact, this may even be a form of socialism, where they combine all their media assets, other property like merchandise and those kinds of things. And they then cooperatively sell those rights today, probably to television, for an astronomical sum. And from that sum, they use money to market the sport on national television. They get great sponsors who want access to those players, or them, pardon, want access to those. Well, in our case, it's players, but in their case, it's just eyeballs, people who watch on television. Well, the problem there is that we've never been able to get horse racing to agree to cooperate commercially, and that's just the bottom line. Tracks are unlike sports leagues and sports teams, who need each other for a schedule. They need to play somebody. Tracks are essentially competitive with one another, especially now in the day of ADW and simulcasting. They're all vying for the same pool, or hopefully growing pie of horse players. And so there's never been the willingness or ability to cooperate. In fact, there's probably antitrust reasons why they couldn't. Yes, we could go and get an antitrust exemption, like I think baseball did years and years ago, because it's price fixing. I wanted the legal details, but that wasn't something that the membership supported. There was not support for any legislation that would have opened the door for some kind of commercial cooperation. So we had to find ways in which the membership would cooperate around things that they all agree upon, around things that they want, that collectively they needed and wanted to have done. And one of those things was more on the regulatory side. So there was some willingness to have regulatory cooperation, and that's what the NTRA Safety and Integrity Alliance became. It was a non-governmental, voluntary organization where people agreed voluntarily to comply with the NTRA Safety and Integrity Code of Standards. They would do that. People wanted to do that because they saw the need for safety and integrity. So we got all the major tracks to cooperate and to work together and to achieve most of the goals of the Safety and Integrity Alliance. That worked fairly well. That became our league office. That became our cooperative venture. I'm not sure people ever realized or understood it as such, but the alliance worked well. The problem the alliance had was twofold. One, we couldn't mandate or enforce participation. If someone decided not to implement some code standard, we could revoke their accreditation standing, but that didn't cost them anything. They didn't lose anything as a result. We couldn't take anything away from them because that's just we didn't have that hammer. So we didn't have a lot of tracks that participated. Certainly horsemen weren't directly engaged by the alliance either. And ultimately, our biggest challenge in some respects was state government, was getting state regulators to adopt common protocols, to adopt the National Uniform Medication Program, for instance. Had we been able to get states all to come on board with the five-point program of the National Uniform Medication Program, that would have gone a long way towards establishing the alliance, and that alliance of tracks is a real significant change in the way the industry conducted business for the good in the areas of safety and integrity. But we couldn't get states to come on board. And ultimately, that's why we jumped on board and behind the HISA, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act, because we realized that it was trying to get states to cooperate, getting tracks, all tracks to cooperate voluntarily, was not going to happen. At least it wasn't going to happen in my lifetime. And we decided that as an organization that it made more sense to look and fight for a federal regulatory structure, federal standards that everyone would have to comply with so that we could get on top of these safety and integrity matters that are so vital to our future. And in effect have worked ourselves out of a job where the alliance is concerned. This time next year, the authority, the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act authority will be up and operating. They'll have, through the Federal Trade Commission, have promulgated federal regulations, which tracks and horsemen will be mandated to comply with, or they will suffer real consequences. Now, I don't expect that to be a hammer that comes down on people immediately. I do anticipate that we're going to transition into this so that people have time to adapt. There may be expenses associated with this. We want to bring the states with us. We don't want this to be punitive. We want it to be a positive move forward for the industry. But also, we do want it to be a real way to deal consistently with problems that arise across the country that put us in a very awkward situation where we have multiple states and they're having to deal with a particular problem as it presents itself in their state. I don't want to belabor this point, but certainly the Bob Baffert situation has presented for us a situation in which it would have been preferable to have one regulator, one set of rules, dealing with all of the infractions, however significant or insignificant the courts may ultimately determine them to be. There would be one set of rules, one adjudicator, and one solution to that problem, and that's where we need to get. I think if you ask Bob Baffert, he'd say the same thing. He'd love to be in that situation. The state-by-state approach is, and now even association by association, it confuses the public, and it's just not the way to move forward. So I'm excited about that opportunity. I think from the regulatory side, we have seen some real change. But on the commercial side, again, back to this league office, I do not see a way to make that work under these circumstances. If I did, I would have tried to make it happen before now. It's not the end of the world that we don't have that commercial cooperation around media rights, around sponsorships and that sort of thing. Although I will say that the National Handicapping Championship is one of those national promotions that has worked, and it has We do act in some respects like a league where the NHC is concerned, because many, many tracks participate. They support the NHC. They see that when we come to town, it helps their business. When they have a qualifier at their racetracks, it's good for business. And to be able to elevate the profile of horse players is so critical, because they back this game. They provide the money, which is the engine for the whole business, the pari-mutuel wagering. So the NHC has become that league activity, if you will, that we envision. Not exactly what people thought about, but I would ask people to rethink their position, to understand how that works. Same with the NTRAC, the Advantage program, our purchasing program, which is nationwide. Actually, it's also in Canada. We have a sponsor in John Deere, which is they're unparalleled. There is no sponsor in horse racing like John Deere. I can say that without fear of contradiction. They are there. They're promoting things on a daily basis. They're providing tractors at deep discounts to tractors to tracks and breeders and farm owners across the country. We're on par to sell $70 million in John Deere tractors this year to horse racing related organizations around the country and in Canada, which is really astounding. And we plow every nickel that we make from that back into horse racing. They sponsor multiple races, the Breeders' Cup, all the Triple Crown tracks, and other tracks as well. They're a real player in this business. So we have some of the elements of the league. It doesn't look like it to people. It's not traditional league look and feel. I would never call myself a commissioner. Interestingly enough, we may actually have a commissioner now in Charlie Sheeler, who's the chairman of the board of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Charlie may be the closest thing we've ever had to a true commissioner. Of course, he has eight other members of the board that could also be called commissioners. But we essentially are going to have a national racing commission for safety and integrity matters. And I can tell you that's going to be important. So in some ways, that's one of the reasons why I felt like today being this period in time, was the right time for me to step down, because the industry is about ready to undergo some extensive changes that I couldn't have even contemplated when I started 15 years ago. And I helped to bring this about. Certainly wasn't all me. So it wasn't all the NTRA. There are so many people that can take some credit for the progress that we made on the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act front. You know, John F. Kennedy, who said victory has 1,000 fathers. He was making a different point, actually, about how nobody wants to take responsibility for losses, but everybody wants to take credit for wins. I think many people can take credit for this one. It was so many people who actually weighed in on this. One of many. So I think we have brought about some of that. People, again, it may not look exactly like people wanted, but from my perspective, what we're doing now has many of the hallmarks of the league. Even the Eclipse Awards, we give away the year-end championships awards, and I think we've developed that product, that program. It's evolved. Still the same awards, but how we deliver them, how we award them, we're constantly looking at changing, evaluating that. But that's what a league does. It determines the champions, and it also hands out the end-of-year awards for all sorts of things. So I'm really proud of what we've built. And I say we because it hasn't been all me. It's a great team at the NTRA. My Lord, anybody, the next person is going to be a lucky person, because working with him or her is going to be a great staff of very capable people.
Well, I think I started, Alex, by saying that this NTRA, this organization, and the things that you and the team have accomplished, it has so many different layers to it. And I think you pointed that out in the past 25 minutes or so here, and really appreciate the visit. And I thought it was appropriate that this morning you would be our industry star of the week on the Equine Forum. And this is a segment that is presented by our good friend Stuart Morris, who is a consigner. He offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation, and he knows that his success is all because of his owners, his clients, and his team. And people can see Stuart at all the major sales. He does a great job, and he's been sponsoring this interview segment for a very long time. And I just thought with all the dedication and time you put into our sport that you deserve to be the industry star of the week on this Saturday morning. So thank you for taking the time. All the best the rest of the year, and I'm sure we'll catch up later in the season. And if not, we'll catch up as soon as you're retired and off the golf course, my friend. But really appreciate the visit, and all the best, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mike. I appreciate it. It was very kind of you.
All right. Alex Waldrop is the president and CEO of the NTRA, at least for about the next 6 months or so. And then he'll transition into retirement. And as you heard him say, a lot of layers to the NTRA and everything they've been able to do behind the scenes. And they've caught some flack at times, but there are a lot of good things that have come out of it, too. Going to take a break. When I come back, it is time for this week's edition of Unsung Heroes, presented by Claiborne. You won't want to miss it. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
The Breeders' Cup Challenge Series just means more.
They're off in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
It means more competition.
If you win one of the challenge races, you have a very good horse.
It means more at stake.
Is probably the best thing that's happened to racing in the last 10 years.
It means more to owners.
To win one of these challenge series is a way that we kind of map out our schedule throughout the year with our horses.
It means win and you are in.
As an owner, I love the Breeders' Cup Win and You're In series.
Worldwide races. Win one and earn an automatic paid entry to the Breeders' Cup World Championships.
Automatic berth takes a lot of pressure off.
With $31 million in purses and awards on the line.
If we're considering two different races and one was a win and you're in and one was not, that would be the tiebreaker.
This is the series you can't afford to miss. This is the Breeders' Cup Challenge Series, Win and You're In.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Fletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online. Enjoy insider access to your stable and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
MyRacehorse is offering securities only for the use of an offering circulation that is part of an offering statement qualified by the Securities and Exchange Commission under Tier 2 of Regulation A. A copy of the offering circular may be obtained at MyRacehorse.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Live racing is back at Ellis Park with a 31-day Run Happy Meet through September 4th. Admission is free with reserved seating available in the Sky Theater and Clubhouse through ellisparkracing.com. And for the first time, all Ellis Park races will be shown in high definition. Purses are scheduled to average a record $350,000 a day, including Kentucky-bred maidens running for a track record $51,000. With 16 stakes and a 2-year-old program as good as anywhere in the country, Ellis Park is the place to be this summer. Visit EllisParkRacing.com. Ellis Park, feel the thunder.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Heroes in the world of sports are not uncommon. Oftentimes, thrusting themselves into the limelight through unimaginable feats.
Back behind the ball, Woods puts it.
And in! He has done it! Tiger is back! Tiger is back on top! Tiger Woods, the 2019 Masters Champion!
And breathtaking performances.
Here's how you count to 8, 3, 2, 1. And for the 8th time, college basketball's national championship trophy is coming home to Kentucky!
But behind every great hero, there are others. Individuals who play a crucial role in the achievements of those we read about in the headlines. The ultimate team players. Content to stand behind the curtain embracing their place as a vital part of a sport's success. In horse racing, these are the unsung heroes.
There are so many unsung heroes in the sport of thoroughbred racing, and today I get, for the very first time, to recognize two unsung heroes during this very segment. We have talked with grooms and hot walkers and outriders and starting gate crew members, but today I had the privilege of visiting with Dean Carpenter, who serves as the chaplain at Keeneland, and with Jill Patterson, who is the founder and the owner of Bluegrass Behavioral Health Services in Lexington, Kentucky, and they have partnered to do some wonderful things for people on the backside, and I welcome them to Unsung Heroes here this morning. And Jill, I'm going to start with you, considering the fact that you are the one who came up with this whole concept. Congratulations and very, very well done.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Explain to me what Bluegrass Behavioral Health Services is and how you're working with horse racing to help those on the backside.
Sure. Well, I'll start kind of from how this started. I moved to Brazil about 3 years ago. I was working in various clinics providing mental health and addiction services. So I noticed in Brazil there was really nothing, no clinics, just really no opportunities for those suffering from mental illness and addiction to get help. So I just started during the pandemic, which is right during COVID, I started Bluegrass Behavioral Health Services. So I'm a psychiatric nurse practitioner, and I assess, diagnose, and treat any type of mental illnesses. This includes depression, bipolar, anxiety. And then I also work with substance abuse. So as you've heard, the heroin epidemic is just climbing every day. And so I offer medication management, counseling for any type of addiction. This includes alcohol and any other type of substance use that someone is suffering from. How I got with Keeneland is that I have a good friend, Jim Perry. He introduced me to Dean, and we decided that there was really nothing that was being done for the people that work in the backstretch. And there are plenty that suffer from these illnesses. So we collaborated together, and we got this set up where I am seeing anyone that works in the backstretch, employees, trainers, jockeys, whoever it may be, that is having problems. They coordinate with Diana, who works in the chaplain office, and Dean, and then they communicate with me, and we get them scheduled, and it's been working out really well.
You know, I'm so glad you mentioned Jim Perry, because he is the one who brought this story to my attention. Each week after Unsung Heroes, I ask listeners that if they know somebody they feel deserves to be an unsung hero and be recognized in our sport, that they bring it to my attention. And my thanks to Jim for doing so. Let me welcome in Dean Carpenter, the chaplain at Keeneland. Dean, when you got the phone call from Jill and she brought the idea up to you, what was your reaction?
Well, let me start by saying thanks for having us on the show. We appreciate it. I was so excited to hear about what Jill and her staff was doing, what the ideas they had. Here was the problem. I had had some resources in the past, and don't get me wrong, some good resources for behavioral health issues, but the problem was the wait time to get someone in to see somebody was getting longer all the time, and I probably credit that to the amount of behavioral health issues, mental illness, substance abuse. But so I was excited about another resource that could be my main resource for issues such as this, because the only the only productive worker is a healthy worker, right? So I said, wow, this is a good opportunity to get people in possibly quicker. And after going and touring the facility and talking to Jill and some of her staff, she assured me, and I'm still appreciative of this, that the wait time would be very minimal, and so far it has been. I mean, that's just such a blessing that we can get people in quick. Because here's what happens. If someone comes to my office or they come to see myself or Diana and they admit that they have a problem that they want help with, then if I say, okay, yeah, we're gonna get you set up, but you know it's gonna be 6 weeks before anyone can talk to you. Well, they don't really have that kind of time, because when they're ready, they're ready. And Jill and I talked about that, and that was why I was so excited that the wait time is very minimal. I mean, extremely minimal. Sometimes it's even less than 24 hours to get everything, you know, going. And that's so doable. 6 weeks, not so much doable. And I'm not saying anything negative about any of the services. It's just a matter of we needed something that was going to be a little more efficient for us.
You know, we have seen mental health in the news recently as so many high-profile professional athletes have stepped away from their sport to kind of recalibrate and work on their mental health. And I know that there are other things. Jill, you mentioned substance abuse is something else that you'll do counseling with. How big of an issue is mental health and mental health well-being at the racetracks and on the backside? And I'll let either one of you take that one.
Okay, I'll start out. We see a lot. The chaplaincy, myself and Diana, the services coordinator there, we're set up to be a help, kind of a holistic approach. I mean, you know, the whole body, the mind, the, you know, the soul, the spirit of the person, the physical well-being. And what we are finding is a lot of the time, and I hope this makes sense, and I hope this makes sense to you too, Jill, but a lot of the time what we think may be a person struggling with someone like a physical issue, It really kind of, if we back up and look at the whole scenario, it's actually something that stemmed from a mental health illness that was kind of an underlying problem. And then after talking to people, you know, they open up. You know, I'm not the professional that Jill is when it comes to reading people and their problems, but we can tell that it's a growing. It's a growing problem, probably everywhere, you know, and on the back, you know, back stretch of the racetrack is no exception. And here's what I think it is, and I think Jill will agree with me. The people on the back stretch, as hard of workers as they are, they have a hard time settling because they move from track to track to track. The majority of them move and make that circuit. So if you're in an unsettled state all the time, trying to get settled into a track, then it's kind of a unstable mental situation, too. Does that make sense, Jill?
Absolutely. Yes, because, like you said, they are traveling. Many of them, you know, don't have the family support that is nearby, you know, to help them with right. any type of problems that they're having. And then, again, they're going to go to the next track. So, you know, it's hard to... I guess, you know, get that long-term trust, and that's what we're trying to establish, you know, with them, that it doesn't matter where you go, you know, we're going to be here, we do telehealth services, and so that will still be offered when they, you know, do leave the Lexington area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's such a wonderful thing that you and your team, Jill, are doing, and Dean, that you and the team at Keeneland have put together. And I want to wish both of you all the best in this endeavor going forward. And each of you are definitely worthy of being called an unsung hero and worthy of being part of this segment presented by Claiborne this morning. Really appreciate you taking the time. Congratulations on what you've already accomplished, and all the best as you continue to build in the future.
Great. Thanks so much for having us today. And I know Dean, Thank you, Dean, for all that you've done for us.
It's
so great.
Oh, thank you. I thank each and every one for having us on the radio show, and Jill, for everything that you're doing, being so easy to work with. We appreciate you.
Yes. Thank you.
Thanks so much, guys. Yeah, and if you want to learn more, you can go to bluegrassbehavioral.com. Just really great stuff. Great work that they're doing behind the scenes. True unsung heroes in the sport of thoroughbred racing. That's what this segment is all about. I'm back right after this word from Claiborne.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
It's such a privilege to be able to bring you those types of stories. Our sport filled with unsung heroes like Jill and Dean. And if you do know somebody that you feel should be recognized as an unsung hero, nominate them today by emailing their story directly to me, mike@horseracingradio.net, and I will do my absolute best to recognize them during these unsung hero segments in the weeks and the months ahead. By the way, you can go back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and listen to all of our unsung hero segments. They are posted there for you as a podcast to listen to, and there have been some fantastic stories that we've been able to bring your way through those segments, and my thanks to Claiborne for making it all possible. When I come back, we'll take a stroll through racing history with Kurt Becker. That's next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Championship Racing is at legendary Pimlico Racecourse. Watch and wager as Maryland's best compete in a Saturday Summer Stakes campaign worth nearly $1.5 million in purses. July 24th features the $200,000 Grade 3 BWI Turf Cup. July 31st features three Match Series Stakes races worth $300,000. And August 21st is a salute to all things Maryland at the Maryland Pride Maryland Strong Celebration. The Pimlico Meet offers live racing Friday through Sunday with a regular post time of 12:40 p.m. Visit the track or catch the live stream at pimlico.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. This week's report begins with an update on post times for the thoroughbred meet, which will take effect starting July 15th. First race post will shift to 1:10 p.m. effective on that July 15th date for Thursdays, Saturdays, and Sundays. Post time for Fridays will remain at 4:50 p.m. The $150,000 Grade 3 Saline Stakes and the $125,000 Fury Stakes share the spotlight this Saturday at Woodbine. A key prep on the road to this year's Woodbine Oaks on August 1st, the mile and 16th main track Saline for three-year-olds has attracted a pair of Canadian breds, Il Malachi and Money for Row, who could indeed contest the $500,000 Oaks. Vying for top honors in the Saline is Kentucky bred Goat to Go, a three-year-old daughter of Street Boss. Trained by dual Hall of Fame inductee Roger Atfield and bred and owned by William Harrigan, Goat to Go will be making her first stakes appearance and this start at Woodbine. "I'm excited," said Harrigan. "She's running in her first graded stakes, and I hope it won't be her last." The Chestnut Filly, who sports a mark of 2-1-0 from seven races, arrives at the Saline off an impressive two-length triumph in a mile and 16th turf engagement at Churchill Downs on June 5th. Harrigan hopes Saturday's effort is Goat to Go's best one yet. The Saline will be complemented by the Fury, a 7-furlong race over the Tapita for 3-year-old Canadian bred fillies, also an important fixture ahead of the Oaks. Lorena, a daughter of Super Speedy, will look to make it 3 straight wins to start her career. The Dark Bay, trained and co-owned by Stuart Simon, was impressive in her debut last November at Woodbine and followed it up with a smart score on June 19th at the Toronto Oval. Brent and Russell McClellan and former jockey Jerry Olguin are the other co-owners of Lorena. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is Dale Romans, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, each week we take you on a stroll through racing history with our good friend and HRN colleague, Kurt Becker. He does a wonderful job of looking back on some of the top performers in the history of the sport of thoroughbred racing, and this week is no exception.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. Later today, Gulfstream Park will present the Carryback Stakes, a race for three-year-olds on the main track at a distance of 7 furlongs. The race pays tribute to the second Florida bred ever to win the Kentucky Derby and the first ever to win the Preakness. But the story of Carryback is one which goes beyond his campaign as America's champion three-year-old of 1961. Conceived in Maryland at Country Life Farm, but foaled in Florida at the Ocala Stud, Carryback was born on April 16, 1958. He was a son of Saggy, famous for handing Citation the only loss of his 1948 Triple Crown campaign. Breeder Jack Price was a shrewd businessman from Cleveland, Ohio, who had made enough money in the manufacturing industry to retire before the age of 50. He stood 5'4" and weighed 140 pounds and wore his salt and pepper hair in a crew cut that was said to make him resemble comedian George Gobel. Price had dabbled in thoroughbred ownership, and upon selling his manufacturing business, he took to training racehorses in order to keep busy. And when Carryback was born, Price was less than enthused about the colt's future. Price would later admit that he thought so little of the scrawny colt that he began racing him in January of his two-year-old year. That's right, the colt debuted as a juvenile in January at Hialeah Racecourse in Miami because Price wanted to race him early and often before he faded. As a two-year-old in 1960, Carryback won just 5 times in 21 starts. But his first victory came on January 29, and just over 9 months later, he won the Remsen Stakes on November 8 at Aqueduct. He had shown remarkable durability during his two-year-old season, which also included wins in the Cowden Stakes and the Garden State Futurity, as well as a track record at Gulfstream Park. Price had turned down an offer of $150,000 for Carryback that season, and the offer soon increased as the colt moved into his sophomore campaign. Someone offered $500,000 following Carryback's win in the 1961 Flamingo Stakes at Hialeah. Price said no. Someone else offered $800,000 after his triumph in the Florida Derby. And again, Price declined to accept. As for appearances, Carryback was anything but attractive. He was small, a dark brown colt standing 15.1 hands and weighing 960 pounds. He was described as high-headed, narrow, long-backed, herring-gutted, sickle-hawk. His knees were slightly forward. His body was narrow. His flank was so shallow that he was said to resemble a wasp. He was thin-bodied and thin-legged. But Price was unfazed by those who ridiculed his horse's appearance. He thought the colt's light frame actually played to his advantage, reducing stress on his bones and joints when he ran. And he noted that the colt possessed 3 qualities which are key to making a good racehorse: class, soundness, and determination. Carryback was also popular with the public because of his stirring rallies from far off the pace, and that included some memorable performances in the 1961 Triple Crown Series. For example, he overcame a 17-length deficit to win the Kentucky Derby as the 5-2 favorite, catching Crozier in the shadow of the wire. At even money, he rallied from 15 lengths off the pace to nail Globemaster by less than a length in the Preakness. It was said that he possessed not a sudden surge of speed, but an almost imperceptible quickening of stride. But as good as he was as a three-year-old, Carryback was not invincible. Most notably, he ran 7th as the 2-5 favorite in the Belmont Stakes as 65-1 long shot Sherlock scored a front-running victory and denied him the Triple Crown. Nonetheless, Carryback returned as a 4-year-old in 1962 to add even more accomplishments to his resume. He equaled the Aqueduct track record at a mile in beating 2-time defending Horse of the Year Kelso in the Metropolitan on Memorial Day, stopping the timer in 1:33.35. 6 weeks later, he beat Kelso again, this time breaking the Monmouth Park track record at 10 furlongs and winning the Monmouth Handicap in 2:03.5. And in August, he won the Whitney Handicap at Saratoga as the odds-on favorite, carrying 130 pounds. In the process, Carryback became only the 4th horse in history to eclipse $1 million in career earnings. He raced in the name of Price's wife, Catherine, carrying the blue and silver stable silks throughout his championship season in 1961, before notching his later achievements under the banner of the Price's reorganized Dorchester Farm Stable. Harry Back was inducted into the Sports Hall of Fame in 1975, and he died in March of 1983, having sired a dozen stakes winners and having become the broodmare sire of an additional 30 black type winners. He is interred on the grounds of the Kentucky Derby Museum in Louisville. We join Gulfstream Park in remembering Harry Back on the 60th anniversary of his championship sophomore season. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history, presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
Another wonderful story. My thanks to Kurt for putting that together. When I come back, I'll tell you about another memorable anniversary in thoroughbred racing and get you set for hour number three. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
Joe Buck and John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
To be able to go back to the movies.
Introduce my family to my new girlfriend.
For my husband, who's been a chronic asthmatic his whole life.
So I can visit friends in a different state.
So I can take my granddaughter out to the park again.
So that I can hug my 85-year-old grandma again.
We each have our own reason for why we're getting vaccinated against COVID-19. What will yours be? Visit GetVaccineAnswers.org for information on the COVID-19 vaccines. It's up to you. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Into the stretch, it's Landalucci in front, drawing out by 8 lengths. Barzell is second by a neck. Princess LaRula third on the outside, and Bold Outline on the rail. Landalucci just galloping by 12 lengths. Landalucci all by herself. Bold Outline on the inside. Landalucci is the winner by 15 lengths. Bold Outline second with Barzell, finishing third.
Memorable race, memorable anniversary. July 10th, 1982, Landalucci, the 2-year-old daughter of Seattle Slew, won that Hollywood Lassie Stakes by 21 lengths under the guidance of Lafitte Pinkai Jr. She ran the 6 furlongs in 108. just 3/5 of a second off the track record. What a day that was. What a performance, and what a filly. That's going to do it for the first 2 hours of today's show, but still plenty more to come in the final hour, which begins with this week's edition of the Road to the Breeders' Cup. I will welcome trainer Michael McCarthy, who is on one heck of a roll here in 2021. At 10:25, I'll welcome John Preachy for a special remembrance and tribute to his longtime friend, Harvey Pack, and in the final segment at 10:40, In the Room with Sean Clancy. If your local station is leaving us right now, you can continue listening at horseracingradio.net and Sirius 219 XM 201. Hour 3 of the Equine Forum is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is HRRN.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
It's Songbird digging in. Martini Glass is trying for the huge upset. Songbird is digging down. She's got Martini Glass, it appears. Rick Porter, you can go to the winner's circle. Songbird's going to win the Delaware Handicap.
Lady Eli still in hand. And here she comes. And she has bursted to the lead as they move into the final furlong. Outstanding is chasing her home. It's only Acting Dad and Consumer Credit, but they're all not going to get the undefeated Lady Eli. She crushed them.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Tis Ms. Sue is bidding for the upset. The hometown horse making Royal Delta work every step of the way down the lane. Royal Delta, Mike Smith, Joe Rocco Jr., and Tis Ms. Sue. Royal Delta, Tis Ms. Sue to the line. Royal Delta sticks it out by a head.
Oscar Performance set down with a 2.5 length lead, called to the bar, and Yoshida trying to chase him home, but Oscar Performance has opened up 3. Called to the bar is second, and then comes Yoshida to the outside, and Holmesman down the center of the course, followed by Good Samaritan. Oscar Performance goes all the way in the Belmont Derby Invitational.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number 3 of a very busy Equine Forum rolling on. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Saturday morning in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. No Breeders' Cup Challenge races on the docket today, but that doesn't mean we don't have great racing action coast to coast. Plenty of great stakes, including a pair of grade ones at Belmont. You have the grade 2 Delaware Handicap at Delaware Park and a couple of good ones north of the border at Woodbine, too. If you missed any portion of the first 2 hours of the program, my interviews with Jed Doro from Delaware Park, Jonathan Thomas talking about the Belmont Derby, Alex Waldrop from the NTRA, or our Unsung Heroes segment where I welcomed Dean Carpenter and Jill Patterson. All you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this show and all of our shows at your leisure, horseracingradio.net, Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Very quickly, going to get to our Road to the Breeders' Cup segment and welcome trainer Michael McCarthy, who has had one hell of a year here in 2021. I'll welcome him momentarily, but want to remind you to weigh in on our poll question at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. If you don't do social media, email your response to me, mike@horseracingradio.net. How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today? Europeans win both, Americans win both, or the Europeans and Americans get a split? And right now, it looks like the Europeans winning both is the favorite in the wagering. 43% of HRN Nation saying, yep, that's the way it's going to go later today. We'll see. Trainer Michael McCarthy may not have a horse in either of those races, but he's had plenty of good horses this year, and he's with me now as we go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, Michael, good morning. I know you're up early on the West Coast, as you are all the time, but appreciate the visit.
Thanks for having me on, Mike.
What a year. You know, last weekend it was CeCe who storms the victory in the Princess Rooney, and then Smooth Like Straight kicked it off for you earlier this year in the Shoemaker Mile. Both of those winning your ins, and then Rombauer winning the Preakness. How do you sum it up?
Yeah, it's been a pretty good year. Been a career year, you know, in a couple of ways. Obviously, winning our first classic, two Breeders' Cup winning year in races in the same year, had some horses run very well this year in some big races. So hopefully a lot to look forward to in the second half of the year.
Yeah, and Smooth Like Straight, CC, they are no strangers to winning big races. They both had great years in 2020, continuing the momentum into 2021. What's been the key to keeping them competing at a high level, Michael?
Smooth Like Straight has always been very, very good. He's a horse that showed up on basically for last year and a half, once a month, in a big dance from California to Kentucky. Always thought highly of him. He's just a very good horse, very, very good horse. I thought he was unlucky Kentucky Derby weekend, not to be a little bit closer than he was at the finish, but came back and was able to go ahead and knock out the Shoemaker. Just got done working here this morning. I thought his work was very, very good. Looking forward to leading him over to the Eddie Reed here next weekend at Del Mar.
Yeah, super tough horse.
Some of these other horses that CC is rounding into form, I thought she was very good last year. She caught a couple racetracks she didn't like. Unlike a lot of the other fillies in her division, she multiple starts, multiple racetracks. I think she was a little overshadowed in some of the Eclipse Award balloting. You had some horses on there that had made 3 and 4 starts. One of them was a grade 2 winner in grade 1 place. These things kind of happen. It's something I don't put a whole lot of credence into anymore, but I think her performance the other day in the Princess Rooney, as you saw, was very good, and there's more of that to come from her this year.
You're certainly no stranger to success in the Breeders' Cup. You think back to City of Light and that huge win in the Dirt Mile back in 2018, for example. Having the Breeders' Cup on the West Coast this year, you have to feel pretty good that the rest of the country has to come to you, right?
Yeah, it's at a what I would call a home game for the Californians. Obviously, Del Mar Racetrack will get a little experience there, and some of these horses will get to train there. Obviously over the summer. I think it's always kind of neat when you don't have to ship across country. But you know what? Everybody's got to do it. It's a rotating event, and it's a world-class event. So obviously looking forward to keeping some horses healthy and see if we can add to our roster of starters down there.
When you're trying to get a horse to the Breeders' Cup, and I talked about City of Light or mentioned City of Light just a minute ago, but trying to get a horse there, Michael, what's the process now? You have 2 winning your ends in your back pocket. Do you back off a little bit? Do you stick to the game plan? How does it work?
I wouldn't say you necessarily back off. I mean, you try to go ahead and keep a horse in form, obviously, for as long as possible. Smooth Like Straight has been like that. CC is getting better. We've got a couple of horses. In the case of a horse like City of Light, he was always very good. I probably made a mistake in trying to run him 1.25 miles as early in his 4-year-old year as I did. But I thought he was a slam dunk in the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile that year. Things just worked out. You never know. I mean, obviously, you're always trying to go ahead and keep him healthy and do the best you can. But as far as taking your foot off the pedal, I don't think you ever want to do that.
Where does your Preakness winner, Rombauer, stand right now?
Worked 5/8 yesterday. Gave a little bit of thought about sending him back east to the Haskell. Couple things I wasn't crazy about is obviously the no whips. He's a horse that needs a little bit of encouragement, even though he laid a little bit closer in the Preakness in Belmont than I had seen from him before. He still needs a little bit of encouragement, a little bit of persevering with Monmouth Park gets a little bit speed favoring, and obviously there's going to be quite a bit of water there this week, and I think it even suits those front runners even better. But we've got races like the Jim Dandy, the West Virginia Derby, all kind of options for him here this summer. And when he's telling us he's ready to roll, we'll go ahead and find a spot for him.
And I'm assuming the ultimate goal with him would be Breeders' Cup Classic?
That would be nice. That would be nice. There's obviously some things like the Dubai World Cup and the Saudi Cup and some other spots out there that are worth a lot of money. So we'll go ahead and just make sure he stays healthy and kind of plot out a course here. But if he were to go ahead and get himself to the Breeders' Cup, we'll give them every opportunity to get there.
I think there were people going into the Belmont Stakes that weren't quite believers in him, even though he had won the Preakness so impressively. Ran a really good third that day. Did that vindicate your – well, I know you always have belief in him, but that did that vindicate Ron Bauer in your eyes?
Yes, it did. I thought he was always very good. You know, the path we took to get there was a little bit unorthodox, but that's what John Fracken and I sort of spoke about. Look, his Preakness performance stands up. It was very fast. It was very good. He came back 3 weeks later in the Belmont. Ran third to two very good, very fresh horses. See what the second half of the year brings for him, but I think there's a few out there with his name on it.
Going down the road to the Breeders' Cup with trainer Michael McCarthy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. He's a busy man. He has a busy morning. So, Michael, I won't keep you much longer, but last year you saddled 39 winners. It was your top year to date. You're already at 30 halfway through 2021, so you're looking to blow past that number, set a new high. I mentioned all the win-in-your-ins. We talked about Ron Bauer. What's been the key to things just continuing to develop and grow for you?
Just feeding faster horses, you know, just keeping some horses around healthy and that kind of thing. Obviously, our numbers have grown a little bit. We're approaching 50 horses, I believe. So, you know, the key in this game is keeping them healthy and finding the right spots for them. We've been able to do that so far this year.
Yeah, you have. Continued success, my friend. I appreciate you taking some time. I know you've got work to do. Go get it done, and all the best moving forward.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Michael McCarthy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Yeah, you can hear him. He's at the barn. We actually had that interview scheduled to be done in about a half an hour from now, and he has a set going out. He said, well, could we do it even earlier? You know, trainers are up early anyway, so he's on the West Coast. 7 a.m. is nothing for him, but he has – getting horses ready to go to the track, so don't want to keep Michael very long. But, yeah, just what a year Michael McCarthy is having. And when you look at what Michael McCarthy has done throughout his career, this should come as no surprise, right? First of all, he learned from a guy in Todd Pletcher who is as good as it comes. And then you look at what he has done since going out on his own. His first greatest stakes win coming in 2007, Revel winning the Sham Stakes. That's a grade three. And then he won the Mineshaft that year. He won the Palos Verdes that year. He won the Lost Virginis that year. All in 2007. He had to wait a while, though, to come back and get another one. That was in 2014 when he won the Bob Hope Stakes with no problem. And since 2016, the past 5 years, Michael McCarthy has really been on a roll and has saddled some incredible horses. You think back to Illuminant, right, who won the Grade 1 Gamely Stakes back in 16. City of Light, who we talked about. City of Light. I mean, come on. Michael did a fantastic job with him, and you heard him. He didn't make every right move. You heard him say he thought he made some mistakes with him. One in particular. Turned out okay, though. Multiple Grade 1 winner. Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile winner. He had Axelrod, who won the Indiana Derby and the Smarty Jones. Who else did he have? He had Liam the Charmer. Right, was also trained by Michael McCarthy, won the John Henry Turf Championship. So think about that. You're talking about a race like the John Henry, a marathon turf race, and you're talking about other races like, let's say, the Triple Bend with City of Light. That's a sprint race, right? He can train any type of racehorse, dirt, turf, doesn't matter. They can go long, they can go short. Michael McCarthy has been a star in this sport for several years. But this, well rewarded now. Well rewarded with a year like this. Two win-in-your-ins under his belt with Smooth Like Straight, winning the Shoemaker Mile. That was the first Breeders' Cup Challenge event, by the way, held in North America back on May 31st. He punched his ticket to the Breeders' Cup Mile. And then he comes back with CeCe last weekend in the Princess Rooney. And CeCe is now headed toward the Philly and Mare Sprint, courtesy of that victory at Gulfstream Park on July 3rd. And, of course, Ron Bauer with a big win in the Preakness. And you heard him say,
not crazy about going to the Haskell. Doesn't like the thought that jockeys can't use the whip to encourage a horse. He said, here's a horse. This is a great example. Here's a horse that needs a little bit of encouragement from time to time. So they'll go to other racetracks where you can do those types of things. Yeah, good stuff. Michael McCarthy, Road to the Breeders' Cup, that segment brought to you every single week here on the show by our friends at Breeders' Cup. And don't forget, as we make our way closer to the World Championships, now, by the way, edging ever closer, I'll give you another countdown here, 118 days, 7 hours, 35 minutes away. November 5th and 6th at Del Mar. We'll be there all week long, by the way, with coverage, our Breeders' Cup countdown shows leading into it, and then, of course, every Breeders' Cup race here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John Preachy is going to join me coming up at right around 10:25 Eastern, just about 10 minutes from right now. He's going to talk about his longtime friend, Harvey Pack, who passed away this week. And so many people have come out on social media and in the press and on different racing shows to remember Harvey. And I certainly attribute my interest in thoroughbred racing to Harvey Pack and his replay shows, which I guarantee you, and I'll tell John this story, I guarantee you I still have VHS tapes laying around in boxes somewhere of those shows. Because there were plenty of times that I wasn't going to be home to watch them, and I never missed one growing up. I grew up in Western Massachusetts, and it was a religion for me to catch the replay show with Harvey Pack. And when I went to the track at Saratoga, that was a thing that we just didn't miss. You got there in time to go watch Harvey Pack wherever he was doing his preview show and walking through the races that day. He was iconic. He was funny. And he was genuine. And I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to him and to horse racing. He made horse racing fun. And as a young person getting into the sport, that was something that I fell in love with. His approach as a horse player and his approach as a broadcaster, I think, was unparalleled. So looking forward to visiting with John Preachy to hear his thoughts. He wrote a beautiful piece on his website, which we'll talk about in that next segment. Really, really well done. I do have a moment here just to tell you a little bit about Bloodhorse and what they have going on. And as you know, we have been partners with Bloodhorse here the past several years. It's a privilege to be aligned with them. There is absolutely no better way to follow racing, breeding, industry news, and even more with Bloodhorse. You can do it there. You can do it online. There are so many platforms in which they actually bring it to you. You have Bloodhorse.com, which is the thoroughbred industry's go-to site. You have the new Bloodhorse Plus, which is really cool. Behind-the-scenes exclusive videos, detailed stakes section, and so much more. And then you have the Bloodhorse Daily app, which is updated throughout the day with news, race results, and plenty more. Or you can have the Bloodhorse Daily delivered to you in an email, and you can also listen via your Amazon Alexa devices. All of those are free. Of course, the traditional Bloodhorse magazine and their social media. You can follow Bloodhorse on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And no one covers thoroughbred racing, breeding, and our sport like Bloodhorse. And they've been doing it for more than 100 years. It's all there at Bloodhorse. Just great people and great stuff over there. Poll question. One more update for you here before we get to John Preachy. How do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out later today? And I started the show in my opening segment talking about this being very similar to a Ryder Cup type of scenario. For all you golf fans out there, where you have the U.S. versus Europe in golf, similar here. You have some Europeans coming over, which are highly regarded. As a matter of fact, they are the morning line favorites in both of those races today. But you have some pretty good three-year-old American turf horses trying to see how they stack up against each other. So it's somewhat of a Ryder Cup feel. And the poll question is, how do you see the Belmont Oaks and Belmont Derby playing out today? Europeans win both, Americans win both, or the Europeans and Americans split the two. That was the leader earlier in the voting, but it's not anymore. 43% of you saying that the Europeans will win both of those. You can go to @HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook to cast your vote, and you can email the show. If you don't do social media, shoot me an email, mike@horseracingradio.net. All right, coming up next, I'll visit with John Preachy. We'll remember the great Harvey Pack. And then in the final segment of the show, right around 10:40, we go in the room with Sean Clancy as he visits with jockey John Court. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times at 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. This weekend's races feature the Grade 3 Saline Stakes on Saturday and the Grade 3 Marine Stakes on Sunday. Both Grade 3s this weekend will feature three-year-old horses pointed towards the Woodbine Oaks and the Queen's Plate. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
Adina Springs bred and raced the best son of Hall of Famer Ghost Zapper, champion, multiple Grade 1 winner, and fellow Hall of Famer Shaman Ghost, who became the first horse in three decades to reel off this historic Grade 1 double.
It is going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile. Shaman Ghost has beaten Midnight Storm.
Seeing is believing with Shaman Ghost. Learn more at AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
A five-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrowgate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first two seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hi, this is Shug McGahee, and I really enjoy listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Good evening. Welcome to the show. We start talking about it January 1st. We'll soon be in Saratoga. We get to Belmont. When Belmont's finished, we'll be in Saratoga. Now we are. We are in Saratoga. Track is off. We're off the turf. But it's opening day, and here we are. Let's look at it right after this. Needless to say, I am caught in a deluge. There will be more scratches, but racing continues through Labor Day. Good night. May the horse be with you.
Nobody did it better. Harvey Pack, passing away this week, and he will be remembered by so many. He has been remembered by so many, myself included. May the horse be with you. And he tossed the program. He did that at the end of all of his shows. And I'm joined now by somebody who knew him very, very well. He was very close to him. That is John Preachy. You can go to horseraceinsider.com and read John's letter to Harvey Pack. It is wonderful. It is an open love letter to Harvey Pack. Celebrate a life worth celebrating. It's fantastic. And John is with me now. John, good morning.
Mike, good morning to you. And as I was listening to you just now, you made me emotional all over again. I'm not quite sure Harvey would like that.
Yeah, he probably wouldn't. But boy, I say nobody did it better. And John, I think I told you when I asked you to join me on the program that show, and Harvey had so many unbelievable programs, but I remember watching Harvey and I remember seeing you, and that had such a big influence on me falling in love with the sport of thoroughbred racing. It just the way he presented the game was unparalleled.
Well, Michael, I don't know if I should say thank you or apologize. you know, no, he made being a horse player a good thing, and he made small C celebrities of a lot of us. Yeah, the first nightly replay show kind of ever. Well, not kind of. It was. You know, OTB came along in the early 70s in New York, and this show went on. Harvey went on the air at NBC. I think it was 1974, as he was able to. He was a TV and radio critic, so I guess he knew he had the right contacts to call, and he pitched the idea of doing a race recreation show on radio, because racing now was a big deal in New York because of New York City OTB. And what he did was get the daily racing form charts, and he got a mental picture of what the race was, and he called it adding some words, subtracting some others, because it was so early. Some of the things we take for granted today, Mike, just wasn't there at the time. I don't know if you knew this or remember, because I might have a few years on you. But in the early 70s, when you went to OTB to make a bet, and you would hear the race call, but that's all you would hear. There were no pictures, and everybody stared at the screen just like, you know, my parents used to stare at the radio when the music or a show came on or whatever. So it was the man was a visionary. I mean, there's just no other way to say it. And out of the NBC radio gig, it was so popular that Naira found him and hired him in 74, originally as a kind of a face of Naira. He would take VIPs and such around and, you know, show them the game and so forth and so on. And he had an idea for a closed circuit show. So you could say that his cable show, the replay show, really started as an in-house closed circuit TV handicapping thing, where he would call the guys in the press box, myself included, and we would come down and take the fifth race or the sixth race or the seventh race. And it became popular, and John Tata, who was the president or CEO, whatever, he was the head honcho at Cablevision. He was a big Harvey fan, and I got lucky for a spell there, in that when I went to pick some of those horses, I don't know, I picked like maybe five winners in a row or something like that. And that made Harvey look good. And you know, so Harvey kind of made me look good. And so he pitches John Tata on the program, and he calls me one day and says, listen, we're going to come down. I want to tape something. And, you know, we're going to use it as a pilot program and see if John Tata approves the idea. And fortunately for everybody, fortunately for every sports fan, John Tata said yes. Harvey was off to the races, and, the rest, as they say, is history.
Yeah, and there were so many great stories. That was one of those. But there were so many great stories, John, that you mentioned in this open love letter to Harvey Pack on your website. And again, I'll remind people, horseraceinsider.com. I highly recommend going to read this piece, because I thought it was so well done. But you talk about working alongside him and how he made everybody better, but he had a unique style of kind of teaching you and bringing you along, and you had to be prepared, right?
Well, you know, Michael, you know as well as anyone in the media who has a platform, whether it be radio or TV, you know, you're doing like a half hour's worth of preparation for every 5 minutes of FaceTime, right? Or
yeah,
voice time, because you don't know which way you're going to go. fortunately, it was my job when I sat alongside of him to voice over the races, you know, tell the people what they saw and what they're about to see, what they're seeing now, and what they just saw. And then you get out, and Harvey would take you to the next race. But it was just so interesting that the thing that's, I don't know, there's so many things that you could remember and many more things that you could forget. But the tragic day then that Mike Venezia suffered a fatal injury at the racetrack at Belmont Park, and the races were canceled, immediately after learning that Mike could not be revived. It was a Wednesday or whatever. Anyway, it was my day to work on the show. I mean, he had a rotation of guests, Stephen Crist and so forth. And we would come, Russ Harris. And Wednesday, I guess, at that time was my day. And now it was Wednesday, and the show had to go on and so forth and so on, and went down to the TV truck, which at that time was at the end of Belmont Park, and we talked over what we were going to do. And that day, just like every other day, Michael, was amazing, because when it was showtime, maybe I'd go down to Harvey's office and we'd sit around and chat for 10 minutes or something, and then we'd get the call, okay, take your seats and whatever. And he'd grab his program, he'd sit down and just start talking. The man did no preparation whatsoever. He really guided me through that show, because I was kind of shaky. I mean, I was shaken up. I mean, we weren't close, but I knew Mike, and it was just a horrible thing. But yeah, you had to go on. So we showed some of the races. We did not show that one. We just kind of talked over what had happened. And or we played a stretch run. I don't remember exactly what we did, but we just recalled Mike's career highlights and some of his big winners and so forth and so on. And it's a day that will always stick with me, because in terms of Harvey, the man was just a flat out genius. That's all it was, because everything that happened. You know, the paddock clubs that he did in Saratoga. The first one was, I don't know if you remember, that the racing secretary's office in Saratoga was like a building right hard by the paddock. Yeah. And there was a space behind there, and Harvey, that's where Harvey's office was at the time. So he would go in the back, and a couple of hundred people would show up every day. And I guess he made the joke that I told the same three jokes for 20 years. I mean, that's true. And, but as I said, the people who showed, who were there and who were regulars, like Harvey cultists or whatever, you know, they'd sit in the front row and they'd listen to these three jokes and they'd laugh every day. And then, of course, Harvey would introduce us. And as a public handicapper, we all went on and, you know, made fools of ourselves. That's what as Republic handicappers do, right? if they don't get lucky. So it's just so much. And when I had heard, I knew he was, failing health. And, you're always surprised. You're always shocked to hear, even when you're sort of anticipating something. And it was interesting, you know, his nature. I mean, you know, I loved him in a way that was sort of at first more professional than personal. And when I heard this news, I mean, it was as if a kind of a pall was cast over me. What I guess I'm trying to say is that he had such a profound effect on my life, personally as well as professionally.
Beautifully said. Visiting with John Preachy, remembering the late Harvey Pack here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. John, the article on your website, the very last line, you say, "He made us all look good, even while he was making us look bad." What does that mean?
Because he would... I had suggested... We created a magazine show for Dark Tuesdays called Inside Racing, where I would voice over the big races from around the country. I mean, much as they do say on, you know, TVG these days or America's Day at the Races and whatnot. And I said, well, what if we did like a road to the, you know, I guess after the Fountain of Youth one day. I said, why don't we do like a road to the Kentucky Derby thing? And I, you know, and he thought about it, and he said, well, the only reason I'll do it is because Belmont is at the end of it. And I said, well, yes, okay. So we'll do this right through the Belmont. And the first time we did it, you know, we went on set, and Harvey started talking, and he said, oh, no, today's Inside Racing, we're going to introduce a new feature, and we brought with us our three-year-old expert, John Preachy. Not that, and it's not because he thinks like a three-year-old, speaks like a three-year-old, it's because he's an expert on three-year-old horses. So that's what I meant by, you know, making me, or making any of us look good while we were looking bad. I mean, you know, he'd make fun of us, and he'd call us out, and sometimes, you know, I mean, on air, and sometimes we deserve it, and, you know, but you had to be ready with a quick comeback, you know, he'd just floor you, you know, that would be the end of your career. But, no, he made us all look good, and, everybody that I knew, felt that it was an honor to be part of that whole thing, because it was the start of something that, you know, horse players of today, you know, take for granted, watching the races, heavy analysis, wagering, because, you know, wagering was still, sort of in the corner. It was sort of a dark deed, you know, before everything became legal and so forth, and people started to understand that, hey, yeah, it's gambling, but boy, this is fun, and look at these great horses and athletes, and look at these jockeys who steer horses in narrow holes going 40 miles an hour, and unlike other sports, you just can't call a timeout. You better make a decision instantly. And he made everybody appreciate that. There were other things that Harvey did, interviews. He did some magazine shows with the late Phil Johnson, the trainer, I remember. And Phil was a great storyteller. He had Woody Stevens on, and all you had to do was just say hello to Woody, and the first thing he'd tell you is remind you that he won five Belmonts in a row, you know. He was, you know, very quick to tell you that was Woody, but that was part of his charm, just like, you know, Harvey being, you know, irreverent with us was part of his charm. So it was, racing had a lot more color in those days than they do now, unfortunately, Michael, but that's a story for another day.
Well, John, to paraphrase the headline of your column on your website, Harvey's life was certainly a life worth celebrating, and I can't thank you enough for spending a little time this morning to help celebrate that life and to help remember somebody who meant a lot to me and meant a lot to so many people, and really appreciate the visit here this morning, my friend.
Well, thanks a lot, Michael. I enjoyed this, and to be part of something that kind of help spread Harvey's legacy for those who maybe discovered him late or just heard the name and didn't know what it was about. It was my pleasure, and thank you very much for asking.
Thanks, John. All the best, my friend. Take care. John Preachy here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, that article, Celebrate a Life Worth Celebrating, an open love letter to Harvey Pack. It's available at horseraceinsider.com. Go back and read it. Do yourself a favor. It's just fantastic. And my thanks to John for taking the time. I'll be back to go in the room with Sean Clancy next on the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Ironicus. This graded stakes-winning millionaire defeated over 20 Grade 1 winners, a Grade 2 winner and course record setter at Saratoga. He won 3 graded stakes and was runner-up in multiple Grade 1 events. Top runners include graded stakes winner Helium.
Repose the challenge. It's Helium in a huge effort.
The leading money earner at stud for emerging sire of sires distorted humor, Ironicus, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Racing is back at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st with racing every Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. Horsemen will love the big money offered during this year's meet with average purses of $500,000 per day. In addition, maidens will compete for $50,000 and stakes horses will benefit from a beefed up stakes schedule. Plus, owners are guaranteed at least $1,000 per start with trainers receiving a $300 per start bonus. It's all happening at Colonial Downs July 19th through September 1st.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick 5, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick 5, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick 6. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Quick tempo, trying to hang tough and battle back along the inside, but he can't match strides with Special Reserve. And Special Reserve pouring it on in the Iowa Sprint, well on his way to a win. Special Reserve, 1 at 2.5.
Special Reserve, the son of Darley Stallion Midshipman, made it look easy with that 2 3/4 length win in the Iowa Sprint Stakes at Prairie Meadows on July 3rd. That victory was the second consecutive in a stakes race following his win in the Grade 3 Maryland Sprint Match Series Stakes in May. Special Reserve has now posted buyers of 101 and 100 respectively in those two stakes and has won 4 of his last 5 for new trainer Mike Maker. And that hot streak makes Special Reserve your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Learn more about Midshipman and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
This is Wesley Ward. I'm the Conqueror of Royal Ascot. I listen to HRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, each week, retired jockey Sean Clancy has a chance to sit down one-on-one for a unique jockey-to-jockey conversation with a designated rider. And a few weeks back, he had a chance to catch up with jockey John Court, not a trainer yet, but who knows? Maybe the future for John Court is on the training side of things. Who knows? But right now, he's riding and continuing to ride at a very high level, and it was a great conversation. I wanted to replay it for you here this morning. Sean Clancy, in the room with John Court.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with jockey John Court. The 60-year-old has notched 4,203 wins and over $108 million in a career that began at Centennial Park in 1980 and is still going strong at Oaklawn Park this winter. Court stands tall as the 63rd leading jockey in wins and 53rd in earnings. Stakes wins on the likes of Wise Dan, Will Take Charge, Arch Arch Arch, and La Voix de Sanimo have highlighted a stellar career. Joining me in the River D Stable studio is John Court. Welcome to the show, John.
Well, thank you, Sean. It's nice to be here.
Take us back to the beginning. Your dad's an architect. Your mother is a nurse, and you say, "Right, I want to be a jockey." I mean, take us back to the beginning of how all this happened.
Oh boy, we are going back. Let me go to the archives there. Well, ever since I was knee high riding on the spring horse, I was always saying I wanted to be a jockey. So I am that guy that followed his childhood dream through school, and my father and mother had horses in the backyard, pleasure horses, but it wasn't too far down the road. We had thoroughbreds that were retired at Hunter Jumper Farms, and I was always over there doing odd jobs, making a couple bucks, working after school. And from that point on, when I was old enough to drive and out of high school, I went right to the track. And as an exercise rider, when I showed up, still learning, and then within a year and a half or two, I can't remember the exact time being around the tracks, I took my license out and started riding races. Here I am today.
Wow, that's an amazing journey. Take us to, how did you get to Centennial Park in Colorado? You grew up in Florida. How did you get there? Somebody say, come on, let's go to Colorado, or how did that happen?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I had some connections across the country that were well into horse racing, and I was invited out to Colorado at Centennial and immediately got on the track to gallop. I think that the fact I went to Colorado was what with my research, and I always felt like even though I was on the farms around Ocala, Florida, galloping horses and breaking yearlings horses that were turnout, and then they'd send them back to the track. They always said, well, when you come to the track, like at Miami, if I started Gulfstream, I would have to start at the bottom at the track, and maybe before they let me gallop at the track, I would start walking hot, and they would see if I had the skills and I could work my way into the saddle. And, of course, you know, young and eager as I was, when I was told you could come right to the track here and we'll just put you galloping horses right away, well, that was the avenue I pursued, with the opportunity to travel to other tracks, which I ventured through Arizona at Turf Paradise and then on to Santa Anita as a gallop boy, and worked my way back. And on my way back through the country working towards the East Coast, I picked up Centennial on the way back and figured as good a time as any to start riding some races before I worked my way back. Ended up in Louisiana and Kentucky and Florida, and pretty much kept Kentucky and Arkansas as the circuit I enjoyed the most. So it seemed competitive, and it was lucrative enough for me as a rider. So that's how I got here to this day, still pursuing that, even though my career has taken me to other racing venues across the country. I've come back to my original circuit, and that's Kentucky, and as well as Louisiana, and definitely Arkansas.
And no doubt. I mean, the career you've made from Centennial to the circuit you're on now. I mean, when did you think, wow, I've made the big stage? I mean, was there a time that when you got to a place like Churchill Downs and kind of looked around and said, wow, I've made it? Or what was that journey like?
Oh, yeah, definitely. When I got to Churchill Downs, I remember as a child watching the place and just the nostalgia and the history there. It definitely resonated within me. And then when I was able to not only win races, but move on up into winning stakes races and then graded races, that's when I thought, well, I made it. It didn't come easy, and I kind of considered it was something I had to carve out over the course of the decades. But it's been such a thrill to be able to pull off these high-caliber races and ride these, even at the low end, where you're riding claiming races and then you see yourself riding graded races, that at, the thrill is always there, and I just continue to pursue it. As long as I'm competing and producing the results that my owners and clients are looking for, it's keeping the game real and fun and very enjoyable.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you. I mean, what's the motivation these days? Is it just winning, or the competing, or the numbers? I mean, do you look at the numbers and say, I want to try to climb even higher than I've already gotten? What motivates you today?
I would say it's a combination of all of it, to be honest with you, Sean. The numbers, I definitely like to improve them, but sometimes I always consider, well, I'm not in a position to turn away such business, and I do hold the Northern Hemisphere trifecta record of riding long shots. So just the competitiveness is probably what keeps me the enjoyment and staying competitive. That really is probably one of the biggest motivations, and I'd have to say the fact that the excitement of the competition is just still as real as it is today as it was, 40 years ago.
Wow. Have you ever been close to retiring? I mean, has there been a time where you're struggling or injuries or different something happened where you think, man, maybe I've had enough? Have you ever come close to that?
Absolutely. I've been in situations even last year at this time I thought I was toasted, but I didn't want to go out with injury. I'd like it to be my own doing and my own choices. But, yeah, I've entertained the thought of many a time, and I've had other people entertain it for me, for that matter. But to be honest with you, it is something I know that I'm in my golden years of riding, but I don't really have any plans to retire anytime soon. But I know at riding at 60 at this level, it's right around the corner. I just hope that the day will come that I'll recognize it's time to step down and do it gracefully.
Yeah, the most important thing is to retire on your own terms, I think. And I was able to retire basically on my own terms. I was, you know, had injuries, but I was kind of getting to the point where I'd had enough. But and that's something I think it's important for all jockeys to be able to retire on your own terms.
Yeah, I like that. You did it impressively, too, by the way. I will say, I enjoyed watching you ride. And I was telling someone the other day about, you know, some of you guys in the jocks room. That was pretty interesting, and I enjoyed that back in the day.
You guys would stroll
through there, and then we'd watch you guys ride, and I was like, they think us flat jockeys are crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I'll never forget sitting in the sauna in Saratoga, and Chip Miller said to me, he said, man, what are you doing today? I took a big, long, deep breath. I said, man, I got to do 42. I'm dying, 42, man. And Mike Smith and Santos, and they fell off their stools laughing. Yeah, 42. We had a good laugh. But for you, what are the scales like? Is that an issue? Is that a fight every day? Or what's your weight situation?
It had been at one time when I was expected to do the light, and then I wanted to meet that expectation. But then they've also adjusted the scale weight over the course of the years, and that's been beneficial. Plus, I've just decided one day I'm not going to beat myself up because it was just too costly. And that would have probably been one of the things that have taken me out, was just constantly reduced. But I'm naturally kind of small. I've got a stocky frame, and I'm able to make the weights to this day, and I'm comfortable. And just with the course of years, it's people ask me about diet. And really now it's a way of life. I do diet. I did diet. But I don't think of it as dieting now because it's just a way of life. It comes natural for me. I don't fill my plate up, and I don't go back for seconds. And I eat very minimal of I know what my body needs. And when I can enjoy what I'm eating and then know that I've had enough, even though I want to continue, I assure you that, I just pull up. I've had people ask me, how do you just pull up? Well, it's a way of life now. It's really no discipline. But it's just something that comes natural.
No question. It's important. I think that is a big struggle for everybody when you ride and the dieting part will really wear you out. It just kind of takes your ability and takes kind of just draining on you. So it makes a big difference to continue the way you've continued. Who were your heroes growing up? I mean, who were the guys you looked at, the jockeys out there? You said, man, I want to be that guy, or try to mold your style to. Was there somebody that really stood out?
Oh, yeah, there was a variety of riders. And one thing that I did learn at a young age, when I say young, I was in a decade into racing, you always have these riders that do stand out, and you want to emulate their style and everything. But everybody, to the minute level, develops their own style. So I would just take certain riders, just the way they think, the style, the way they would, their hands, they sit on a horse, and kind of mix it up and try to apply my skills from the way I would sit on a horse to the way I applied all my skills. And over the course of the years, I know people, they're always asking me about the Hall of Famers and the most popular riders, but I actually was able to, over the course of the year, riding with some really sound, good riders that are maybe not as popular, that were that had ingrained some really essential qualities in me. And one of them, like right here in Arkansas, was Larry Snyder. He's, you know, passed away, but he had a lot of an integrity and drive to the way he applied his skill. And I realized that that had ingrained in me more so than the Jerry Bailey's or Pat Day's or even John Velasquez still rides to this day. And these are guys that you definitely are proven and established and Hall of Famers that you continue to admire. But there's a variety of riders that I would really put together. Even the late Garth Patterson, he had such a style. And that you just never knew about Garth. He would get the run and do things that were just incredibly impressive. And I'm constantly finding that in riders that maybe are overlooked by the public, and some horsemen do notice. But generally, there's no one particular rider that I've had to follow and try to emulate.
Do you see young jockeys today where you just want to kind of grab them and give them some advice? I mean, you've lasted all these years and done it the right way. Do you look at young kids and think, man, you're squandering a gift, or kind of look at it like a mentor?
Yeah, absolutely. I've got some riders that do come to me, and it's admirable that they'll want to sit down and even want me to watch their videos and really dissect it. And I'll try to encourage them in any and every way I can. And then, of course, as you well know, that everybody's got different personalities and the ability to receive advice. And I try never basically to ever advise anybody who doesn't ask for it. But at one point in time, you know, I recognized that there was a time to approach a rider and certainly a time that you do not approach a rider. But this day and age, I rarely ever approach too many riders because, surprisingly, as I was sharing with some people, that now there's more riders coming to me because I think of the seniority position I have and the established career that I've been able to. I mean, I'm not, I haven't got the best in numbers, but I always went into this game wanting longevity, and I'd love to have shot to stardom, such as Steve Coffin was a hero. But at the same time, I'm not sure if I could have been able to pursue that kind of excitement as it would have been. But I don't know if I'd still be around, because I can look back and a lot of those guys that have accomplished such numbers didn't really make it into their 60s. So I feel really good. I'm still riding. And I think one of the things I did is I was able to pace myself, if that can be said, because you know how tough this game can be. You can be pacing yourself and feeling great, and then just one horse can make you feel sidelined and chronically labored up. But yeah, I feel fortunate that I'm still competing at this age, and you know, there are riders that come to me for advice and ask me to watch them ride or review their films.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, that's a good role to have and be a mentor for young guys.
Yes, absolutely.
Exactly. Hey, that's John Court, still going strong at 60, a class act all the way. All the best, John. Thanks for being on the show.
All right, Sean, thank you for having me. You guys have a great day.
No, great stuff. And you can hear In the Room with Sean Clancy every Saturday here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I'm going to get to a final break. I'll come back and wrap this one up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for racing's biggest events.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Greatest Stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victorist Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judmont Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination, but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolatey candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill. But he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those.
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left. Grabs a water bottle and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Thursday evenings, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, is the Briznet.com call-in show. It's your chance to call in and let the Horse Racing Radio Nation know what's on your mind. Call us at 888-966-HRRN and discuss the topics you choose in the world of thoroughbred racing. The Briznet.com call-in show, every Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern, on Sirius 219 and XM 201, or streaming live online at horseracingradio.net.
My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible this morning. That's Jed Doro from Delaware Park, Jonathan Thomas, who was with me in the first hour of the show, Alex Waldrop from the NTRA, Dean Carpenter, and Jill Patterson with our Unsung Heroes segment. Trainer Michael McCarthy was here, as was John Preachy just a short time ago. And, of course, John Court and Sean Clancy in the room. If you missed any portion, head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast at your leisure and follow us on social media. Poll question, looks like the Europeans win both. That's at least what 41% of you are saying. Thanks for participating in that. Thanks for listening to the Equine Forum. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studio, to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. I'm Mike Penna. We'll talk to you next week on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Thanks for listening, everybody. Go Steelers.